Good morning. I am Randy Fiorini, Chair of the Delta Stewardship Council, and this is the time and place for the public hearing to receive comments orally and or in writing on the appeals of the certification of consistency for California Water Fix, for which convenience sake we will refer to as Water Fix appeals. Let the record reflect that it is now 9 o'clock on Thursday, October 25th, 2018, my mother's 100th birthday. And we are here today at the Ramada Inn West Sacramento Conference Center, 1250 Halyard Drive, West Sacramento, California. Council members Mike Gatto, Frank Damrell, and Skip Thompson are present for this hearing. Before we begin, I have a few general announcements. First, please look around now and identify the exits closest to you. Should an alarm sound, we will all be required to evacuate this room immediately. In that event, please take your valuables with you. Second, the bathrooms are located down the hall, just beyond the reaches of this building. Third, there is a public parking lot across the street from the hotel. If you are in need of convenient parking, that's mostly for those of you that aren't here yet. And last, please silence your cell phones or other devices now. Now turning to the process for today's hearing, the council's main role in today's hearing is to continue to listen to comments on the Water Fix appeals. We want to make sure that everyone who wants to provide comments has an opportunity to speak. Please keep in mind when providing comments today that the scope of the council's review is limited to whether or not certification of consistency was supported by substantial evidence in the record before the Department of Water Resources. Let me emphasize that the scope of our review is limited to a substantial evidence review of the record. As with yesterday's proceedings, commenters speaking today will not be sworn in. The entire hearing will be recorded by a certified court reporter, and we will take the same morning, lunch, and afternoon breaks we took yesterday. The rough transcript of the hearing and all written materials presented during the hearing will be shared with the listserv and posted on the council's webpage. Yesterday I indicated that will be as soon as available. It's likely that means in roughly a couple of weeks. If you are interested in purchasing final transcripts from the reporters, please coordinate with them directly. The company name is California Reporting. And Debbie Fulqua is the court reporter. Their telephone number is 510-224-4476. As with all public council meetings, this meeting is being webcast on the internet, and the audio and video will be available for later review. We heard yesterday, Wednesday, from the Department of Water Resources, the Delta Protection Commission, and all of the 9 appellant groups. The Department of Water Resources will lead off this morning and complete their presentation with their remaining 45 minutes. Then the Delta Protection Commission and appellant groups A1 through A8 will have the opportunity to each make 5-minute closing comments if they desire. Council members, again, I encourage you to hold your questions for the party speaking until the conclusion of their closing statement, including DWR's 45-minute presentation today. At that point, I will open the opportunity for council members' questions before proceeding on to the next party. Once party and Delta Protection Commission closing statements have ended, any members of the public who want to provide public comment will be allowed 3 minutes for oral presentation. Additional time will be allowed for questions by council members or council staff. Given the number of parties and the time allotted to each, we anticipate that public comment for all members of the public will begin at approximately 12:30 to 1 o'clock today and will resume at 9 a.m. on Friday, tomorrow, October 26th. If you want to provide public comment and are not a speaker on behalf of the Department of Water Resources, the Delta Protection Commission, or one of the appellant groups, we ask that you fill out a blue speaker card that are on the table to my left. These public comments will be heard in the group order we receive the completed blue speaker cards. In order to allow everyone an opportunity to speak, we may shorten the time limit of speakers during the public comment portion of the hearing. If we do so, it will be announced prior to the beginning of that portion of the hearing. If you wish to submit written comments at this meeting, please give them to our clerk, Lita Brady, located here to my left. After we hear from everyone who has filled out a blue speaker card today, we will recess the public comment portion of this hearing and resume tomorrow at 9 a.m. in this room. Finally, when you come up to speak, we ask that you do a couple of things so that the council, audience, and court reporter may hear you, and so that your comments are entered into the record and can be responded to appropriately. First, speak into the microphone clearly. And second, please begin by stating your name and identifying the organization you represent, if any. We will now continue to hear comments from the Department of Water Resources. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ken Bogdan, and I am an attorney with the Department of Water Resources. Up here with me today is Catherine Marquez. She's a program manager with the Department of Water Resources, as well as Steph Morris, who's general counsel for the Design and Construction Authority for California Water Fix. We also have a large team of our EIR preparers are here at the ready to answer questions after our presentation. So I'm not going to introduce all of them. There's quite a few, but if we need an expert to come clarify what's in the record or explain it, we're happy to offer that. So today, instead of walking through our certification step by step, which was our original thought, we took some time yesterday to try and focus on what was most important to the appellant in their presentations from yesterday. And you heard about a number of different issues. You heard about the relative timing of the certification related to ongoing actions, other actions. You heard about our outreach efforts. You heard about issues related, of course, to Delta as a place and reducing conflicts related to WaterFix, ecosystem benefits of the project, as well as specific resource related issues, traffic, agriculture, those kind of things. So we're going to focus on that, and then, again, depending on your questions, we're happy to answer specifics related to our certification. So first, and it doesn't seem to be, I am hitting the right button that says forward. Sure. Oh, silly me. Power switch. Got it. Thank you. So I'll just start with, we had an introduction related to your standard of review related to focus on the substantial evidence on the record supporting DWR's certification of consistency. There was what we feel is a mischaracterization of that standard of review yesterday. I'm not going to go through that. I certainly defer to your counsel to advise you on how you're approaching the record and reviewing our facts on the record to support our certification. I also defer to counsel on advising you on the Delta Protection Commission's role for advising you or making recommendations related to the hearing process versus their separate role related to how they advise you on the Delta plan. So not going to spend really any time on that. As was mentioned yesterday, in order to be consistent with the Delta plan policies or under the Delta Reform Act, we need to be consistent with the relevant Delta plan policies. And if that's found not to be feasible, we need to be consistent with the co-equal goals. It was implied that we had just jumped to the co-equal goals part of this and didn't really spend any time on the consistency related to each of the plan policies. Of course, we submitted a very detailed, thorough set of findings related to that and supporting administrative record that, again, we're happy to go over specific issues within that record depending on your questions. There were a number of common themes that we heard yesterday. One is that your role here isn't just to determine whether there's substantial evidence on the record, but to determine whether our certification was premature related to certain ongoing issues. As was noted, your role is fairly clear in the Delta Reform Act related to appeals on the consistency determination. But I wanted to address some of these issues that folks had questioned. Ongoing CEQA processes. We are considering additional design refinements, and there is a draft EIR out. There is not yet a final EIR related to that. We have not yet approved that project. That is not part of the project that we certified consistency on. There's no requirement under the Delta Reform Act or in your Delta Plan policies that CEQA has to be finished. You recommend that a final EIR be done for a project before you move forward. We have one. We certified our EIR for the project that we are certifying the consistency on in July of 2017, and that is where our focus is. We included some information on the supplement and how that could relate to our certification, but we did not certify that component of the project. We did that for information for the Stewardship Council as well as the public, and if we hadn't, we would have probably been asked to do that by the appellant. So we anticipated that question. And, you know, just to note, also the only timing requirement really you have is, of course, to have a consistency determination done before implementing the project, and it, your requirements say nothing about the timing of CEQA, regulatory processes such as the Water Board's change petition process, or resolving potential issues related to federal government interaction with the project. So, you know, we start with that. One of the other things that you heard is that we should be at 100% design before we do certification, which from a CEQA standpoint is not consistent with CEQA, because you're trying to come up with a proposal that you can consider potential effects and refinements as you're moving through the process. And of course, we want to be doing that through the CEQA process. And, you know, I will say that there was some mischaracterization on the Bureau of Reclamation's role in California WaterFix. DWR is the applicant here. DWR will build and operate WaterFix as a component of the state water project. Reclamation is not building the project. Reclamation is not funding the project. Reclamation's involvement in WaterFix relates to how they will operate the Central Valley project related to the coordinated operations for potential participation for CVP contractors. They are continuing in the process as a co-petitioner in the change petition proceedings in front of the Water Board. They continue in the process as a federal lead agency for NEPA. As was noted, they've issued a supplemental EIS on the design refinements very recently. And they are also federal lead action agency for Section 7 compliance. And they remain participating in the project in all of those ways. The other component here that we want to make sure is clear is about the other documents that you've heard referenced that aren't on our record, came after our certification, related to various letters from commissioner or a regional director or even the president of the United States. They have been submitted to you, and I do encourage you to you read them, because they don't say that the federal government is abandoning water quality requirements in the state of California. They don't say that they're abandoning participating in California programs. I will say for all of these components, whether it's related specifically to WaterFix or it's water quality control plan actions outside of WaterFix, it's the coordinated operations agreement that the State Water Project and CVP have, any of these changes, and that includes the Water Board's change petition authorization for WaterFix, that includes our design refinements, any changes that happen in the future where there's a change in WaterFix, we will coordinate with you through the early consultation process that you have and then determine appropriate next steps for Delta Reform Act compliance. That is how the process works. Every project goes through design refinements as they move forward. Every project has continuing involvement. Every project, every covered action should have an adaptive management plan that certainly California WaterFix has. And through all of that, we expect that there'll be refinements, input based on regulatory agency actions, based on better understanding of environmental issues. And with every one of those, as the project proponent, we will evaluate how it changes WaterFix, and we will coordinate with you through early consultation to determine how we best can comply with the Delta Reform Act. So I wanted to move on to our outreach program. Our outreach program is quite extensive. The efforts that we've had over the some 12 years of studying the issues related to California WaterFix have contributed to a project that we have that has gone through previous design refinements, looking at some 18 alternatives to try and address the issues that both achieve the project objectives and are consistent with the Delta Plan policies. These outreach activities, starting in 2006 with a steering committee that was comprised of various entities, including local entities, giving input on how to proceed with what was the BDCP or Bay Delta Conservation Plan, and then also evolved with other alternatives and California WaterFix. And as a part of that, they had subcommittees, they had local meetings related to this. One of the subcommittees was referred to yesterday, the Fish Facility Tech Team, that did a very detailed study of different alternatives related to the intake location. And that was actually done through a transparent process, noticed with meetings and inviting the public to get reports from the updates on how the Fish Facility Tech Team was progressing. And so it starts from that point and moves forward related to not just the legal requirements, but also going beyond that trying to do other outreach efforts to engage the public through as many creative ways as we could, knowing that there's a variety of communities that need to understand and have access to the information. Whether that our record shows that we've had hundreds of meetings, briefings, town halls, small group meetings, presentations on specific resource issues, one-on-ones, many, many working groups focusing on the co-equal goals issues, the operations issues, recreation issues, agricultural issues. I will mention also that we have extensive documentation on compliance with Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. And the federal lead action agency there actually isn't Bureau of Reclamation, it's Army Corps of Engineers. We have an entire chapter in the EIR devoted to the environmental justice compliance that is necessary, not just necessary from a federal agency perspective, but also participated with the Department of Water Resources. The environmental justice chapter documents the thorough analysis that we did for outreach to minority and low-income communities, and documents the information that we collected related to the culturally significant practices and places, social activities, businesses, recreations, subsistence activities, very detailed outreach program that included translations, included multilingual communications, And it followed the federal protocols set out related to environmental justice. I also wanted to mention the Delta community's outreach that occurs as a component of implementation in design and construction. Our record includes, and we documented this in our certification, approximately 50 different measures that will include local effects through development of plans and coordinating with the locals on specific issues related to truck travel, barge operations, noise vibration impacts, cultural resource issues, and specific site selection related to both restoration projects as well as ag land preservation. So there is a documented support related to the outreach that we did in terms of the impact analysis, but all the outreach we're going to continue to do through future development of the project. In addition, we have added a community benefits fund component that was referenced yesterday. There's a small statement in our certification about it that it would incorporate good neighbor policies to avoid negative impacts on ag lands, residences, businesses, and provide a mechanism for communication with the local government and community members. And it would disperse funds to protect and enhance the Delta. We have, subsequent to our certification, met with the Delta Conservancy and Eric Vink at the Delta Protection Commission to describe next steps related to that. We anticipate these next steps as coordinating to figure out the best way to manage that. We expect it to be managed locally. We want to try and integrate with investment programs that are already exist. And that was all discussed at a general level because we want to develop this collaboratively. This is not something we want to tell the Delta, this is what you're getting and like it. So as a part of that, we're, you know, contemplating this idea to, you know, have it be managed locally, and there is a commitment to fund it. We need to figure out what the funding will be to adequately address the concerns throughout the life of construction and possibly through some of operation. So you've heard some issues on our certification related to specific resource areas. There was, of course, question on whether the project is really beneficial to the ecosystem. There were questions related to land use and, agricultural issues. There were water quality concerns raised, transportation issues raised. There were issues related to reduced reliance as well as our meeting the co-equal goals. So we're going to go through some of those issues now to just kind of, again, touch on them, those issues that the appellants thought were appropriate to important to bring to your attention. First one on ecosystem benefits. The appellants mischaracterized, I would say, the benefits of WaterFix. WaterFix does, or I should say, would restore more natural flows, especially in times when the sensitive fish species are present in the South Delta. And the issues related to the existing project facilities, there certainly would be reduced entrainment in the South Delta related to those existing facilities because the project would operate in dual conveyance associated with that. There are more stringent operational requirements that will be placed on the South Delta facilities, again, acknowledging the issues related to the fish and water quality concerns. And also, there's a component to add more spring outflow, specifically focused on the state-listed species, the longfin smelt. These measures, the development of the project when it was BDCP to California WaterFix, went through very detailed coordination with the state and federal fish agencies. They have signed off on the project. We received biological opinions, no jeopardy biological opinions in 2017, as well as the incidental take permit from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Talking about land use for a second, and there were comments made that we didn't consider the land use issues. Of course, we did. We consider neighboring land use issues. Of course, the Delta plan policy doesn't actually prohibit siting facilities in areas where there have a variety of land use designations. As a part of that, though, you know, there's an acknowledgement that WaterFix is trying to avoid, minimize, reduce those issues. I'm sorry. Oh, thanks. Did I hit it backwards? Maybe I did. To minimize some of those issues. And so, you know, we have a record that documents how we've addressed the agricultural lands and the variety of measures to preserve at one-to-one. We've developed an ag land stewardship program that will be coordinated directly with the locals in order to make sure that we're addressing their concerns and we're not, again, telling them what we think is most appropriate, but developing it collaboratively. Related to traffic, we believe there was a mischaracterization of some of the effects. There was, I think, a mention yesterday of 800 traffic trips on certain roadways due to WaterFix. That was a peak estimate based not just on WaterFix trucks, but all trucks on the roadway. And there's, of course, an incremental contribution of the 800 related to WaterFix, but it made it seem like it was all due to WaterFix. And of course, you can appreciate that we had traffic experts that did the impact analysis. We are incorporating all of the experts' recommendations to address all the traffic issues that were identified as we move through the environmental analysis. Another issue that came up was related to levees and roads on top of those levees. Our record shows that through expert analysis, neither the levees or roads would be compromised by construction. We have committed to implement a monitoring program for the integrity of the levees, both before we start construction and during construction, and then post-project. We're doing that to ensure that the integrity of the levees is not compromised, as well as also ensuring that the road system will be as good, if not better, than when construction started. So both in terms of the levee as well as the roads, they say they're going to abandon the roads and we're going to ruin the roads, but we have committed to a program to make sure that that doesn't happen. Related to noise, again, there was a mischaracterization of how the pile driving would happen for 10 years throughout the life of the project. The construction period and the construction windows is much more limited, and the noise impact analysis is really an assumption related to worst case. What if everyone operated at the same time? But even if that was the case, we have committed to a program of a non-impact pile driving, which we're going to assess in terms of feasibility in certain locations as we get more information on the geology in the area. So we've committed to developing a plan, studying how we can avoid at all, for feasibility purposes, these noise-related issues. We also do have a noise complaint response program that we will implement as well. I'm going to ask Steph Morris to just cover a couple of the water quality issues that we heard yesterday.
Thank you. I'm not going to address all of the issues related to water quality, but DWR did provide detailed responses to the water quality issues raised by appellants in the tables with citations to the record. I did want to address a couple of them, though. First of all, DWR and Reclamation have committed and shown in the record that they will continue to meet D1641 water quality control plan requirements, which are the existing requirements today. Regarding the export inflow ratio, maybe we could just take a step back to understand exactly what that is. DWR is not proposing to change the EI ratio objective in D1641. Rather, the export inflow ratio is a calculation, and D1641 prescribes how you calculate it. So the export is specifically defined as the South Delta facilities, and the inflow is defined at Freeport. So because you are adding a new facility in the North Delta, you will inevitably have to change the calculation because the current calculation doesn't include a North Delta facility because it didn't exist at the time. The express purpose of the EI ratio is to minimize entrainment in the South Delta from the export facilities. So DWR proposed, and the keyword here is proposed, to move the measurement point for the inflow portion of that calculation downstream from the North Delta diversions. The reason they did this was because the North Delta diversions have specific bypass flow requirements to deal with the entrainment nearly 30 miles north of the existing South Delta facilities. Furthermore, DWR compared the two different methods of calculations and found that they have substantially the same outflow. So that analysis is cited in their tables and in the is part of the record if you want to find that. And finally, I would just mention that the issue is currently before the State Water Resources Control Board since it's their regulations, and they will be deciding this as part of the change in point of diversion, where the appropriate what the appropriate adjustments to that EI calculation will be. And of course, DWR will comply with that. The second issue that I wanted to address was the Sacramento River reverse flow or significant reverse flow issue that was raised by Sacramento County. There's extensive expert testimony that DWR cites to show that the significant reverse flow events will not occur more frequently. As detailed in the submittals, Regional Sand in Sacramento County overestimated the reverse flow events that would occur by a factor of about 100. DWR has committed to coordinate with these entities to develop an operations plan to avoid any adverse impacts to their operations. We believe that the modeling overstates what the potential impacts could be because it doesn't allow for operational changes to be made. It's very rigid. And so these reverse flows are largely occurring in certain tidal events that aren't lasting all day, and so it's easy to adjust operations to ensure that these events will not occur more frequently. Finally, I'd like to address the issue raised by City of Stockton related to the chloride levels at their intake and the increases they believe in costs for treatment plant. You heard yesterday that they believe the chloride levels at their intake would exceed the 110 milligram level in roughly 360 days out of the 16-year simulation period. However, as detailed in DWR's responses and citations to the record, that is inaccurate for two reasons. One, that baseline comparison they were using, the model run, had a model run that compared that had no climate change impacts in it, and they compared that to a model run with climate change impacts, thereby attributing to WaterFix project issues that are likely climate change impacts. Second, as detailed in the expert testimony of Dr. Nader Tirani and part of the record as DWR Exhibit 932, the chloride conversion formula was incorrect, and it overestimated the chloride at Stockton's intake. By using the chloride conversion formula incorrectly, it overestimated the chloride at that location by about 22%. And because that probably sounds like Greek to most people, the reason that there's different conversion formulas for chloride is it depends on where you are located in the delta. And at certain locations, there's more seawater, you would use a different chloride conversion formula. That's it.
Thank you. So another issue that was raised, I think our certification was again mischaracterized. Appellants would have you believe that we didn't do any documentation related to reduced reliance. DWR conducted a thorough review of the 2015 urban water management plans and agricultural water management plans for the state water contractor agencies that could receive water supply reliability benefits. This included review of all available plans, which covered 97% of the contract amounts for South Delta State Water Project contractors. Again, all documented in our record and referenced in our certification. Our record shows that water suppliers that could receive water supply reliability benefits from WaterFix are making measurable measurable reductions in Delta reliance through developing local projects that promote regional self-reliance. DWR has demonstrated that the need for the project, DWR has demonstrated that the need for the project was not significantly caused by water suppliers failing to include measurable reductions in Delta reliance in their 2015 management plans. Our record documents the need for the project was based on increasingly restrictive regulations due to the declines of sensitive fish species, a recognition of long-term threats from climate change and sea level rise, and protections from the risks of levee failure. I should also note that the Delta Plan policy related to this does not require covered actions to actually reduce exports. It prohibits export projects if all three of the conditions are met, which they are not here. As DWR has shown, two of the three are not met. Moving on to co-equal goals, and maybe this was the last issue that we had, at least in very generally, had heard. Of course, I don't need to remind you what the Delta Reform Act co-equal goals say. But I should note that the Delta Reform Act does recognize that new Delta conveyance infrastructure is essential to achieving the co-equal goals. Your 2018 Delta Plan amendments process also acknowledged the importance of dual conveyance facilities to address some of the important issues in the Delta. So, again, to point out that your Delta plan does not require that a covered action single-handedly achieve the co-equal goals and enhance Delta as a place to show consistency. Otherwise, very few, if any, projects or covered actions would ever meet that criteria. We'll note again that DWR has certified that the WaterFix is consistent with all the relevant Delta plan policies, first point. Second point, only if we go through some of those and in your review you think, well, that's not feasible that they could possibly do that, then we would also support that WaterFix meets the co-equal goals. Well, I have 12 minutes. I can't believe I don't have more to say on this, which I do, but I wanted to make sure that we had enough time to get through the issues and get to your questions. So we'll just end by, again, summarizing. We believe that there's substantial evidence in DWR's administrative record to support DWR's detailed findings in the certification of consistency of California WaterFix. We recommend and support that all appeals be denied because none have showed that we do not have substantial evidence in the record related to our certification of consistency. So with that, I want to offer again to respond to questions that you have. And if there are follow-up questions, I'm sure we'd handle that through the service list, but we were happy to answer follow-up questions in writing. We anticipate this to be a process where we want to make sure that it's clear what we have in the record to support our consistency determinations, and follow-up submittals, I think, are probably a natural part of this process. So with that.
So that concludes your presentation.
That concludes our presentation.
Great. Thank you. Questions from council members? Council member Gatto?
So would you build on something that you stated, I believe it was with your slide 13, where you, if we could pull it up again. I think it was the first point you made on slide 13. You said something about the consistency, that there would never be a project if the standard was X. You said there would never be a project that met consistency, and I'd just like you to build on that a little bit more.
To address the co-equal goals of water supply reliability, meeting ecosystem needs, and doing that in a way that enhances and preserves the delta, it's necessary to think of this in terms of the types of infrastructure projects that would have to occur that would normally have effects in the delta in order to do measures that would ensure water reliability. There are construction components associated with it. And to have you interpret the preserve and enhance component, construction activities don't do that. So I think it would be difficult to impossible to try and point to any kind of activity to somehow increase the ability of water supply reliability with in the Delta without some adverse effects associated with it, which is why the Delta Plan contemplates a very detailed series of mitigation measures, saying, you know, we understand these projects need to go in as covered actions, but we want to make sure that they address all the concerns that we think are out there related to those indirect issues that aren't, of course, part of the project objective, but, you know, they create noise. They create other issues as you locate them in the Delta.
Terrific. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Other questions?
How do you define refinement in your certificate? What is a refinement as opposed to change in project?
Design refinement is a natural course of going from 10% to 100%. As we go through those different elements of project review with other agencies, for instance, the Army Corps of Engineers requires us to, waiting to see if that ringing will stop.
They're working on it.
Okay. Necessarily requires us to go through design refinements to achieve their standards under the Rivers and Harbors Act. So as we move forward with that, we're going to have to make sure that we're addressing their particular issues related to navigability. All of those can lead to modifications that might trigger the need to do additional CEQA. Project under CEQA, as you probably well know, is a discretionary action that has a direct or indirect effect on the physical environment. And so project under CEQA is not necessarily a change in the project, and there's all kinds of CEQA standards on what triggers a supplement and a subsequent EIR versus what fits under an addendum. And I won't go into those, but just to say that the project refinements and change in the project you know, maybe related to changing broader objectives. I would say that WaterFix, in order to say that there's a change in the project, I'm using air quotes, is to is more focused on a change in how we're addressing the broader objectives that we've identified with the project, while project refinements are the objectives are all being achieved, but we're modifying smaller components in order to address localized issues and project site-specific issues. I hope that answers your question.
Councilmember Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions, and they were as a result of some of the comments made yesterday. So I've broken down my questions into the A1 through A4, A5, 6, so the reporter can keep track of it, and I can make reference to some of the articles that I'm referring to. In the letter dated October 15, 2018, from the office of Stephen Volker, on page 2, the statement is, many sea level rise projections are roughly double the amount assumed in the department's final EIR, EIS. Some are greater than that. And it goes on to talk about how the environmental document that DWR is relying on, some of those sea level rise levels are half of what NOAA actually has presented. So can you address, because sea level rise was not specific to your presentation. It was, in my opinion, glossed over. This is a pretty important thing. So could you address the difference between NOAA's estimates and the department's EIR?
Mm-hmm. And certainly it's not something we've glossed over in our record. There is quite a detailed discussion of sea level rise and how we've addressed climate change issues. The EIR was developed over a series of years, and estimates related to sea level rise and climate change effects have been revised, updated. It's ongoing. We used estimates that are within the range of the current directives. They're not the maximum, but they're within the range of what's advised to be studying related to the regulatory agencies. And our final EIR actually discusses the fact that there's new information that's come out and how that new information doesn't change our analysis. And this goes for really several update issues. An EIR, as it gets issued, you know, it takes a few years to do an EIR. You do a draft, you get comments, you do a final. The lead agency can't just say, well, you know, you got to live with what we heard 2 or 3 years ago. We might need to update that, and they might have to recirculate a draft EIR, which we actually did. We recirculated a draft EIR because there was updated modeling information, updated operational information that we needed to go back out to the public as an additional draft. We did that. Well, at the time of the final, we did an assessment of saying, well, what new information do we have? We created a very extensive analysis. Again, it's all part of the record, including why the new recommendations that were made don't change our conclusions related to our modeling for sea level rise.
Let me just add to that briefly. In Appendix 5A, there is a detailed analysis on climate change for the modeling that was used, and it analyzed from anywhere from 6 to 55 inches of climate change. And it's also detailed in the response and citations to the record that this number that was used is consistent with the current literature from OPR.
Okay. On page 4 of that same letter, they talk about the recent letters from the Interior Secretary, the President, and you've indicated that they should be ignored because the federal government isn't a party to this project.
And I'm sorry if I misled you into thinking they should be ignored. I don't think I used the word ignored.
Well, you emphasize they're not
part of our record.
They're not part of our record, so...
Correct.
And I'm having a hard time ignoring something that says that our policy is to maximize exports out of the Delta.
Mm-hmm. And, I can't speak for the federal government, so I don't know what they meant. I do know that in both of those letters, they talk about consistent with applicable law. And also one of those letters mentions that the CVP Act directs them to comply with the California state water quality requirements. And so there is an acknowledgement, at least, that they are not doing this outside the parameters that they feel are appropriate. But maybe a more important thing is that there is nothing in those letters that say how WaterFix changes. It would be speculative to try and estimate what reclamation would do in reaction, or the federal government would do in reaction to those declarations, and then try and estimate how that and apply it to WaterFix in a way that would change how we studied the project, and then, of course, how we certified it as consistent with the Delta plan.
Now that brings a point. Was there analysis done that had the state only being involved in operations and federal government not having anything to, no part in that?
No. So there was no analysis done in the record that we used to certify for a state-only project. The record supports right now that the WaterFix will be utilized, of course, by the state water project contractors. And then the information that we have now is that continued participation that the federal government has right now in how we coordinated operations and how we utilize and share facilities, that will continue. And until we get information on the record that says otherwise, we thought it premature to try and estimate, well, what would this thing do and what kind of impacts would that have without any directive on how to manage that, how to analyze that.
Okay. On page 6, continuing with this letter, there was a lot said about barge movement and how that may exacerbate invasive species. And I'll just read part of this. While DWR's Mitigation Monitoring Reporting Program, MMRP, indicates that DWR will develop a barge operations plan that will need to address how to avoid introducing AIV, that plan has not been prepared and its efficacy is unknown. Have you got a plan now? Have you thought about a plan?
Sure, yeah. So this references, actually, there are many plans that have not been developed in detail. One of the components of CEQA, as you're working through issues related to impacts to, a variety of resources, including barge effects related to invasive species, is to set up performance standards on and basically create directives on what the plans need to do in order to address a variety of issues. And again, that relates to some extent on how project planning works, how the environmental review works at the level of design. We don't have the exact detail on all the elements of barge travel to pinpoint how to best manage that related to effects to fish species, related to invasives, related to impacts to recreation. So when we go to that next level of design, when we go to that next level of detail and reach out to get input from a variety of participants and stakeholders, we want to make sure that we get the input from them all before we develop these plans. So no, there is not a plan developed right now, but again, we have set up specific performance standards in our environmental analysis that says this is how that plan needs to be managed, specific to barge traffic related to invasives. And as a separate note, the National Marine Fisheries Service is quite interested in our in the development of this barge traffic plan and has conditioned our biological opinion, and we've, of course, incorporated those commitments into our certification on developing that those management plans.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, still in A1 through A4, and I want to make sure I have it's Robert Wright. He's representing California Water Impact Network and a number of others. On page 3 of his submittal, continuing on that federal government participation or not participating, one of the things that he brought up that should be concerning is that his opinion, Mr. Wright's opinion, is that the federal government's policy is more water exports. But even as concerning, or to me more concerning, is that there is no judicial review. So, and let me just read what Mr. Wright writes here. A rider in the Interior Appropriation Bill that would exempt the Water Fix Tunnels Project from federal or state judiciary review under any federal or state law recently passed the House. So is Mr. Wright accurate when he says, makes these statements?
Well, it's my understanding that is not law. And it's my understanding the state of California came out and was unsupportive, to say the least, of that provision. If that, well, I wouldn't speculate. So because it's not law, I have no response other than to say that, you know, we're tracking all federal activities, including potential legislation. And as much as the state can be involved in trying to influence that, we have been. And, I can't respond any further on that. I don't know the latest on where it is in the House or Senate.
Just want to make sure my concerns are on the record.
Okay.
Okay, on page 5 of Mr. Wright's submittal, he talks about the Water Board decision 1641. That seems to be, you talk about common themes, that seems to be a common theme that these inflow and export ratios, and you explained it, maybe they understood. I didn't understand all of that. But
I understand it better with her explanation.
But we certainly have a difference of opinion as to these flow issues.
Yeah, let me start. And I want to go back to this writer or whatever it was on the federal legislation. I don't believe that has anything to do with this substantial evidence that we have on the record related to our certification for consistency with the Delta Plan. Components related to whether folks can litigate against the project certainly don't relate to the fact that we have created an extensive record supporting our certification. Related to your question about, you know, D-1641, a lot of the appellants are participating in the State Water Board process with their consideration of the change in point of diversion. They are voicing their concerns, and the Water Board is weighing the evidence. We have an extensive analysis done related to our compliance with D-1641. We have expert opinion and have documented this for the record related to that compliance. So I would argue some of their information, maybe most of it, isn't on our record for certification, but even if it was, I think there is sufficient documentation that we do have substantial evidence that our experts are correct in how they've addressed WaterFix compliance with D-1641.
So let me just read another statement from Mr. Wright.
Sure.
The project will not comply with D-1641. Instead, DWR simply removed the project from the D-1641 export-to-flow ratio. Consequently, the project does not comply with governing State Water Board flow requirements. I don't need an answer. I'm just...
Oh,
I'm just okay.
Who is Mr. Wright?
Robert Wright.
Friends of the River. I do want to say, though, that, again, DWR cannot and did not unilaterally remove requirements under D1641. That's within the state board's jurisdiction. It's simply a matter of it would have to be discussed to amend how you calculate it, because the existing explicit calculation in D1641 doesn't include any North Delta diversions. It's limited in the definition to the South Delta export facilities.
And thank you. And the reason for my questions is you've made statements which are contradictory to statements made yesterday, and I'm just trying to get a sense of how you respond to them. So I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, now I'm in A5 to A6, Stockton's submittal letter. Let me just read their first comment that you can respond to it. The procedural and substantive requirements established by CEQA, including responses to comments, ensure public notice and involvement in order to provide decision makers and the public with sufficient information regarding the project under consideration to form an informed opinion. They were talking about conclusionary statements unsupported by factual information. So that's, I don't know if you want to respond to that. Or?
Well, I'll say first that, of course, the question on whether our CEQA document was adequate is not in front of you. Our CEQA document was certified in 2017. We utilized that to a large extent for our support for our certification. And, as a responsible agency working under the directives of CEQA, you were utilizing that CEQA document for your decision-making as well. Again, folks critiquing the adequacy of meeting certain substantive or procedural requirements of CEQA is not the question that we're focused on here. We're focused on consistency with the Delta Plan policies. So I guess that would be my reaction.
Let's talk about the Delta Plan policy GP1B2. It requires the department document use of best available science or the best scientific information and data for informing management and policy decisions which meet established guidelines and criteria. They go on to talk about the Independent Science Board that has been quite critical of your environmental documents. And let me just read for the record. Let me see if I can get exact where I want to start. The ISB commented on the recirculated draft EIR supplemental draft EIS that the department's analysis had, quote, specific incompleteness in treatment of adaptive management, habitat restoration, levees, and long-term effects. Let me just go to another. Sacramento County, page 6. I apologize, folks. Okay, in Sacramento County's submittal as well, and I'm reading from their submittal. It's from the Sacramento County, I think, the Water Board submittal. It's page, looks to be, I'm not sure, page 6. On June 16, 2017, the Delta Independent Science Board issued comments critical of the final EIR's, quote, shortcomings with respect to best science. The Delta Independent Science Board letter was issued following the release of DWR's responses to comments on the 2015 Delta Independent Science Board report. The final EIR responses to comments were issued on December 16th. As of June 17th, the Delta Independent Science Board still found that DWR's treatment of the comments and the final EIR was inadequate. Your comments?
Yeah, so we did respond to all comments, including detailed responses to the ISB. We also created an additional response document that went kind of to the next step, and that is a part of our record in our certification. The Independent Science Board, where they're looking, I believe, and to generally summarize, looking for site-specific information on every single resource issue for every single and every single mitigation component, which is not possible and not something that is consistent with our adaptive management program or our mitigation approach to try and develop plans from a local perspective when we get to that next level of site-specific design. And we understand that there's a variety of opinions from other experts that from their perspective, that's not adequate. We have the expert opinion on our record concluding that it was not just adequate, but it was appropriate in terms of supporting conclusions in the CEQA process as well as for our certification.
Okay. Grouping A7 through A9, starting with Ms. Meserve and Mr. Keelings, and I think they're representing San Joaquin, Yolo, Solano, and some other agencies. Yeah. On page 5 of their submittal, DWR's explanation of the project's plan to prevent the violation of water quality standards is inadequate. For instance, EWR lists California Water Fix Mitigation Measure WQ-11E as part of the compliance with the Delta Plan PEIR Mitigation Measure 3-1. California Water Fix Mitigation Measure WQ-11E relies on future real-time operations to reduce or eliminate water quality degradation. This approach defers the development of actual mitigation measures with a promise that relevant impacts would be reduced to less than significant by unspecified means at some unspecified later date. Deferring the development mitigation is inconsistent with GP1B2.
I just want to clarify I believe what they're speaking to is that the water quality modeling shows violations and that DWR's expert operator testimony as part of this record shows that the modeling, which is relied upon for making those determinations, is a monthly time step. And that means that the actual operations within the month to meet certain water quality standards, which have different averaging periods that are typically less than a month, like perhaps 7 or 14 days, cannot adequately be captured in the model. So that some of the modeling shows that there would be exceedances of the standards, but the actual real-time operations would correct for that, but we cannot show that in the modeling. And this response is detailed, and the citations to the record are in DWR's response to this exact letter in the table that was provided.
Okay, thank you. Staying on page 5, groundwater impacts. DWR claimed that the sustainable groundwater management plan required by the PEIR mitigation measure 21-2 is not applicable to the project because the project does not rely on groundwater. GP1B2, page 11-66. As explained below, this assertion is incorrect based on the text of the mitigation measures 21-2. DWR incorrectly asserts that the PEIR mitigation measure 21-2 applies only to a project that directly relies on groundwater.
Well, we have our groundwater expert who developed the measures and analysis related to that, and I'm wondering if she might want to come up and help respond to that and point to the record where that information can be helpful to you. It's Gwen okay. Buchholz.
All right.
Gwen, can you spell your last name for the assistants?
Absolutely.
Oh, she's got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I am Gwen Buchholz, and I was responsible for the development of the groundwater section in the EIR-EIS, and also presented similar information at the State Water Resource Control Board hearings for the for this project. We acknowledge in the EIR-EIS, and in the record, that at this planning stage, we cannot do a full groundwater, detailed groundwater local model that required by the Delta Plan. And instead, we used a broad-ranged groundwater model that was developed by USGS using their data and Department of Water Resource hydrologic data. What we have required then is during design that there would be one of the very first things would be to establish a groundwater monitoring network, get the well logs, go out and actually focus looking at the existing wells on properties, and develop site-specific desktop studies and modeling studies that would be compliant with the Delta Plan. But it's, again, one of those things that we usually do during design, and I've done it during design on other projects. And we've also included in the EIR-EIS mitigation measures that monitoring network, let me just say, would continue through design and construction. So we'd have a long period of design to see how the groundwater responds to a pre-construction and pre-operation conditions, and then during construction to see if it changed during dewatering, and also then during operations. And okay. So.
All right, thank you. Let me just read again. DWR's own analysis admits that construction of the project would deplete groundwater supplies and interfere with recharge during construction. This is in your final EIR-EIS, pages 7-18 through 7-19.
I'll let Gwen answer that since she's sitting up here.
Yes. The use of the CVHM model, which was developed by U.S. Geological Survey, did show that during some periods of time, during the summer periods of time, especially when the Sacramento River flows declined and they would change with different operations, we could see a change in groundwater depths of anywhere from 2 to 5 feet in the most critical periods of time over a 24-year period. The situation, and again, this is a monthly model, so that's why we said we absolutely need the monitoring network to see what's happening pre-project and during construction and post-project. We also have mitigation measures if there are changes of trying to work with the landowners. We recognize that the people out there actually rely upon their wells.
Well, this is just an aside. With SGMA having been being implemented, it's a tremendous challenge to be hitting the groundwater when SGMA says that you're supposed to be stabilizing and actually improving groundwater recharge. So that's just an aside, kind of my county supervisor thoughts as a member of the SGMA.
And may I just add one more thing, if I could, councilman, is that we are planning on providing, it's actually in the mitigation and in the project description, that we would provide monthly information to the public with an annual report. So all of the information that's collected in the groundwater monitoring network would actually be available to the SGMA agencies also, and would provide them additional information to show both historical changes because of hydrology as well as the project.
Okay. I think you've answered this, but I'd like to read the comment. DWR has deferred analysis of the actual geologic conditions where plans to construct facilities, and it conducted no on-site specific analysis of potential hydrogeological effects of slurry walls.
We did not We did not conduct geotechnical investigations on the sites. We had entry problems during the planning stages. And so that's why when we have the geotechnical work, that's when we're going to be doing the monitoring. We did add the slurry walls between the draft EIR, EIS, and the recirculated drafts on the later on, and so that all of the intake sites would be surrounded by slurry walls to protect anything from dewatering, because that was one of the, if you look in our draft document published in 2013, we had much larger groundwater impacts. So that's why they're going to put slurry walls around the intakes and also around the shafts, the tunnels. And then to protect, we had the opposite effect at Four Bays, where we had seepage going out and flooding areas. So slurry walls would be surrounding the Four Bay sites too.
Thank you. On page 10, now we've addressed the D-1641, so. Okay, I'm almost done. A-739, Central Delta Water, and I think South Delta, Dante Nomolini's letter. Again, the D-16, I'm just using your words, common themes.
Mm-hmm.
D-1641.
Yeah.
Is a concern to many of the applicants, or appellants, I should say. Sacramento, the Delta Independent Science Board comments, I already read that for you. Delta Protection Commission comments. On page 6 of the Delta Protection Commission submittal, Department of Water Resources has failed to grapple with the reality demonstrated through evidence in the record that the California Water Fix puts the long-term sustainability of small Delta communities in serious jeopardy. Also thoroughly fails to offer any meaningful mitigation for such impacts. They go on to say that this is not a new issue of concern to the council and to the commission. When first presented with the environmental analysis of the socioeconomic impacts in 2013, council staff comment letter raised concerns about changes to community character. And I don't know that I need to read that, but that is an issue that the counties in that represent Hood and Clarksburg, they're very concerned about the impact as this project's going to have on them. You've addressed your outreach, what you wanted to do, and that brings me to a community benefit fund.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find it in DPC, but if somewhere in their submittal, they say they never had, they don't know what you're talking about, and I think one of the presenters also made the same comment.
Yeah.
So where specifically in your documentation is this community benefit fund?
Well, as I mentioned, in our certification, there's a commitment to provide the community benefit fund. The Delta Protection Commission letter that Eric Vink sent, it's unfortunate because it was written after we had already met with him, and yet he hadn't referenced our conversation that we had to start the next steps at trying to develop how we implement this program. Because there's no more detail on it in the record, our certification just has that one component. So as I mentioned on that slide that I presented, in our conversations that we had with the Delta Conservancy as well as the Delta Protection Commission, we discussed about potentials on how this would work to be managed locally, to possibly be managed by an entity like the Delta Protection Commission, to be managed through their investment fund program, and creating a financially appropriate program to address community concerns that go beyond CEQA. We have, as I said, we have almost 50 CEQA measures, but CEQA talks about physical effects on the environment. And the Delta as an evolving place goes beyond that. And so we recognize that there's an importance that is to the Delta Protection Commission, to the Delta Stewardship Council, related to those issues. And so we want to develop this collaboratively with the appropriate local entities to try and come up with something that can best work through community concerns and address them, whether that's business-related, agricultural, recreational. So again, you're absolutely correct. Our record has a short statement on a commitment to it. The detail that we're already starting to discuss with these, with the Eric Vink of the Delta Protection Commission, as well as the Delta Conservancy, is how do we best get to that next level? And that's what we want to do collaboratively.
You know, the problem that I see in your outreach is this very issue. It seemed to me, and I don't know if others see it the same way, it was like it was an afterthought. Mm-hmm. Should have engaged early and talked to the community about, you know, these benefit funds and all the things you wanted to do. It, to me, it just seemed like an afterthought. We had to put something in there to make it look like we're trying to reach mm-hmm. out to the communities. Just a side note. Delta Plan Policy DPP1, locate new urban development wisely. Now, this is a big issue for local government. California Water Fix is not consistent with DPP1 because it introduces long-term industrial land uses to a rural landscape, and these impacts contribute to blight. The record shows that the proposed concrete batch plant sites would introduce an industrial use to an otherwise rural landscapes, which would create long-term blight on the Delta as located, and during operation of the batch plant, communities would have air quality, aesthetics, and noise impacts. I think you've addressed that to some degree.
Yeah, the batch plant, which is an important component to different kinds of construction activities, you need to have the slurry concrete. It's my understanding. I know I'm not an engineer. You need to have these facilities close to where you're actually doing the construction. Otherwise, there's an issue on the integrity of the materials. So you need to have them close. If you actually try and site these industrial facilities, and I don't want to call them temporary because it's through a large component of the construction. They will be not permanent after construction is done. They will be depending on the utility of it and needs likely will be removed. But they'll be for some period of time, and it's I think not. I wouldn't call it short term. And so you have these locations, the batch plant, where you have this almost inherent conflict with impact issues. If you site an industrial facility like that further away from the construction site, well, then you're creating a whole bunch more traffic issues, air quality issues, as the trucks have to go from one point to the other. So you want to try and locate these as close as you can to the construction site, not just from a material standpoint, but also to try and minimize those other effects that you, if you don't site it there, you then push on possibly some other local use. And so the challenge is to come up with a way to do that, and we've tried to, and in our design refinements that we're contemplating right now, try to better site these batch plants in order to further consider the potential effects that they have to the surrounding area.
Specific question. Does the department think that DPP1 does not apply to the California Water Fix?
So, you know, for all of these DPP or the Delta Plan policies, there are different ways of interpreting, you know, what does it mean by an industrial project is the obviously the project the project objectives aren't related to an industrial use. We're not, you know, trying to make money by selling concrete, right? So as a component of projects, we're not a levy project either, but we have effects to the levy in terms of how the intakes are built and possible restoration actions for that could affect levies. So that's our challenge, where we say, well, we don't really fit what we think is in the square definition of the words used, but we're going to try and discuss it anyhow. So we offer that, you know, this is part of the challenge as you're working through a relatively new criteria that's been set up in the Delta Plan policies. And we've tried to say, well, we think the plain language says this, but if it doesn't, here's our thoughts on how we think we are still consistent with the spirit of it, if you will.
Okay. DWR has failed to meet the specific requirements of GP1, namely that it, quote, it has not clearly identified areas where consistency with relevant regulatory policies is not feasible. An explanation of the reason why it is not feasible and an explanation how the covered action nonetheless on the whole is consistent with the co-equal goals. I'm reading for the record. I don't know that unless you have a response.
I don't, because I don't know the specific regulatory programs we're not complying with.
Okay, it's page 4 of the Delta Protection Commission submittal.
Okay.
All right.
And if I could offer, Councilmember Thompson, we will be preparing a issue-by-issue response to index in the record how all of the issues that the Delta Protection Commission, that they've outlined in the letters, how we believe we've addressed it. So this may be helpful to you. We're working on that now. Obviously, we got a lot of submittals last week and with the hearing. But I offer that as it may be helpful to you as you're working through and trying to decide if our record does support the certification based on what you heard from all of these appellants. I offer that. We expect to submit that sometime next week.
Perfect. And the reason I debated whether or not to ask my questions today or next month at the workshop, but I thought, in all fairness to the department, I ought to ask my questions now. So if you wanted to put together a response for me in November, that would work as well.
Yeah, that's perfect. So hopefully the response may be even earlier than the workshop.
Okay, fine. And I just wanted to make more of a commentary than a question for you that, you know, the Delta, and I'll cite some of the statistics on the DPC letter, that the Delta ag economy is a $1 billion economy. I mean, we're talking about an economy that has a lot to the state and this nation and the world for that effect. And we ought to be very careful when we proceed in replumbing or looking at the Delta. In addition to the $1 billion agricultural economy, there's nearly 12,400 jobs that go along with that economy, and nearly $1 million in value added and $2 billion in output in the 5 Delta counties alone. And then finally on page, that was page 12, page 13. The council suggested specific measures that were considered feasible to mitigate agriculture impacts, such as, quote, supporting the Delta's ag economy through using the Delta Investment Fund, authorized by the 2009 amendment to the Delta Protection Act, PRC 29778-0.5, to fund Delta Plan recommendations DPR-8, DPR-9. To date, we have been unable to find any indication these feasible mitigations have been specifically incorporated or any explanation why they have not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in our record, we do have an extensive, program for addressing effects to agricultural lands. There wasn't a specific funding related to the Delta Investment Fund, and as I mentioned, the commitment to do the Community Benefits Fund could create a direct link to their investment fund related to these issues and other issues, whether it be recreation or whatever, whatever is determined important as locally managed. So the program that we have also includes conservation easements and working with the locals to try and develop appropriate locations. The availability of conservation easements are limited related to these issues, and so that's why we have a more detailed set of options to try and address the agricultural needs. So we believe that we have sufficient information to support our conclusion related to this issue for the Delta Plan policy. And as a side note, we're hopeful in our continued discussions with the Delta Protection Commission that we're able to work with them and the management of this Community Benefit Fund to address those issues that they've identified are important.
And then talking about the mitigation, the ratios, DWR did consider a conventional farmland mitigation program with a 1-to-1 ratio consistent with the Delta Plan mitigation measure, yet dismissed it with a statement that, quote, may not be feasible because of cost or availability of land. This type of dismissive conclusion is unacceptable and shows little regard for either the Delta Plan or the Delta Ag community.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, are all my questions.
Okay, well, just to respond to that again, we believe we have committed to preservation at a 1-to-1 ratio where it's feasible. Of course, all mitigation needs to be feasible in CEQA or within the regulatory confines, and that includes availability. And we recognize that some of the areas that we may have agricultural effects, there might not be conservation easements available. So we're not blowing it off. I would disagree with the characterization that the Delta Protection Commission had for the project overall, as well as many of the elements that they have presented in their letter. But I would say that, the moving forward with addressing the local community needs, specifically and importantly, agriculture being one of the primary ones, as well as recreation, we have a mitigation program to address that we'll continue to coordinate with the Delta Protection Commission and the local communities in order to make sure that those needs are met. Thank you.
Okay, I just have a couple of questions for you to gain a little more specificity on a couple of things that we touched on today. Yesterday, Billy, can you call up the question A slide for me, please? Yesterday in his presentation, Mr. Brodsky spoke about the fact that the project before the council for certification employs extensive impact pile driving, which could result in high noise levels in Delta communities. He described the potential for DWR to consider alternative, lower-impact pile-driving techniques. You've alluded to that a little bit. Can you please identify specific evidence in the record that shows whether DWR considered alternatives to impact pile-driving that would avoid or reduce noise impacts to Delta communities, and how or whether DWR found them infeasible?
So on this issue, in the detailed response that DWR submitted, there are the citations. The issue is that DWR is committed to trying to use non-impact driving to drive piles. But without the further geotechnical work, they can't commit to it at this point in time because it may not be feasible. But the mitigation measures that are cited in DWR's responses directly deal with that issue. And in fact, yesterday it was characterized that this evidence wasn't rebutted. And in fact, on cross-examination of this exact witness, he had not reviewed the mitigation measures to see that DWR was committed to use non-impact pile driving where it was feasible.
Okay. All right. Then in your response to our second sea level rise question in the supplemental notice, you state that DWR would not change its decisions related to water fix based on more current projections for sea level rise. What specific substantial evidence in the record supports this conclusion that the use of more current projections would not have changed the department's decision regarding its water fix design?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, our final EIR considers a sensitivity analysis related to those updated estimates related to sea level rise. And it indicated that we did not need to go back and redo all our modeling because from a sensitivity standpoint, we were still consistent with the recommendations. And so that there was no need to have to revise it for basically having the model come out with the same results. And I don't know if we want to elaborate on our modeling related to this issue if you want more information on it. All the way in the back. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Chanda Chimakuri, who put together all of the modeling for the EIR EIS.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So as Ms. Morris explained earlier, we, right from the start of this project and back in 2010, actually in 2009 when we were initiating the modeling, we looked at the best available science on the sea level rise projections for 2025 and 2030, roughly around that time, and also 2060. And we found that the median projections were around half a foot or 1.5 foot at 2030 to 2060 level. Not only that, but in addition to those two particular assumptions, we looked at the overall range of projections through 2100, which is up to 55 inches of sea level rise, and we analyzed what would be the delta conditions like under those projected sea level rise conditions and documented in the EIR EIS. And furthermore, as stated in our response to the appellant's claims, we identified the latest signs the latest guidance identified by Ocean Protection Council that came out in March 2018, and even the risk covers, the most risk averse projections that they are providing or recommending to use in planning applications are still in line with our current assumptions for 2030 and 2060.
Thank you. If I could call up one of our project engineers, I don't know if we adequately addressed your pile driving question, and so I just wanted to make sure that we have our engineer, Prabha, come up and assist in that response.
Good morning. My name is Prabha Rubin. I'm a principal engineer with Department of Water Resources. As our attorneys mentioned, we have analyzed impact pile driving because we wanted to disclose the worst case scenario when it comes to pile installation. And again, as they mentioned, we are looking at utilizing drill piers that wouldn't need any pile driving for the intake foundations. And that's the method that was used for the Freeport intake construction. And we believe that's doable for this project, but because of the lack of geotechnical information at this point, we are unable to make that commitment. The impact pile driving is not something new that it has been used for many decades, and that particular method has been used for several projects throughout the Delta. For example, at the Freeport intake, they used three types of pile insulation: the impact driving, vibratory driving, and the drill piers. And the alternative intake project that was completed, I believe, six or seven years ago by the Contra Costa Water District, all the piles for the intake structure was driven by impact method. And DWR has done several other projects using the impact driving. We understand the the noise and other related impacts, but because of the lack of geotechnical information, we are unable to make that commitment at this point. But we are hopeful that we would be able to use the drill piers for the intake foundation.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I may ask some clarifying questions as a result of the PowerPoint presentation.
Sure.
At this point, I don't remember the slide numbers, Ken, but the reduced reliance slide. Wondering if CVP contractors will receive water as a result of the project?
Our operational modeling is performed with CVP contractors as a part of the operations for WaterFix. There is no firm commitment we have on the record. We've, of course, the earlier BDCP with the same infrastructure components, that many CVP or several CVP contractors were active participants. If you've followed how the Bureau of Reclamation was trying to develop the more detail on how costs would be allocated, the CVP contractor said we're not able to commit to WaterFix at this time until we resolve those issues. My understanding is they continue their communications to figure out how that is going to be achieved. And as a part of that, it's not clear exactly who is going to be participating. But I believe, because Bureau of Reclamation remains a co-petitioner in the change petition process, that they are proceeding with the understanding that they believe there will be that connectivity. We did in our record show, because we don't have specificity on who would participate, we do in our record show what we believe is substantial evidence on Bureau of Reclamation's program related to increase the self-reliance, regional self-reliance, as they work with CVP contractors, specifically because we couldn't identify anyone as saying, yeah, they're on board, except Santa Clara Valley Water District. But even them, as both a state water project contractor and CVP contractor, they again haven't resolved the mechanism on how CVP contractors would be able to access. So they can't commit 100% that they are a part of WaterFix on the CVP side.
Thank you. And then the second question I have, I think your GP1B1 slide was the last one or the second to last slide. And we're wondering if there are specific Delta Plan policies for which you're invoking that GP1B1 provision, that the project is nevertheless consistent with the co-equal goals.
Well, again, this was...
And I know you discussed this briefly with Councilmember Thompson, but
yeah,
were there
you.
Any specific policies or...
Certainly the ones that... actually, they're not coming to mind, because I know there were two or three where we specifically identified them, and I'm hoping somebody can pass me a note to reminding me of what they were. WRP1 and DPP1.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. In DWR's supplemental responses and also in today's presentation, you've alluded to the possibility that future refinements could trigger future Delta Reform Act compliance. By that, do you mean refiling consistency, or can you elaborate what you interpret that to mean?
I don't know what that means right now, as we are looking at the extent of a refinement, and that goes to some extent to the question on what's a project change versus a refinement. We believe that the current design refinements that we're considering approving at the end of the CEQA process, they are all proposed to address local concerns, environmental concerns, aquatic resource concerns, engineering concerns. And as a part of that, we've documented how we don't believe that alters the consistency determination that we've made. So we would want to, through early consultation, talk to you about that once the ex parte communications have been removed related to WaterFix, to then determine, does this sit still consistent with, or I don't want to use that word again, but does this at all change how the consistency determination has been done? And then we would have to evaluate if what rounds would have of consistency determination would have to be amended, revised, altered. As you know, there's nothing in your process right now that specifically relates to a reinitiation of consultation like Section 7 has, or developing an addendum versus a supplement versus a subsequent EIR. You don't have those that guidance in your process. So we would be working with you to figure out, well, what makes sense.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right, then thank you to DWR folks for your presentation and for the answers to our questions. We are going to take a 15-minute break. It is roughly 10:45 now. We'll reconvene at 11 o'clock and pick up with the 5-minute presentations of each of the appellants in the Delta Protection Commission. We're now in recess for 15 minutes.
The public can review them. So I just wanted to let all the public know, and particularly the parties and the Delta Protection Commission as a participant, that if there are going to be future submittals turned into the council after this hearing, we're not going to have a chance to consider them as a staff, likely before the November workshop. So we'll do our best to consider them by the December hearing, but anything that comes in after this hearing is going to be too tight a turnaround for us to address as staff, likely. We'll do our best, but if we're going to get more voluminous documents, it's going to be too difficult by November to fully address them by the workshop.
So question, the question I would have is, just for the public who might be watching or people out there who wish to submit something akin to a public comment, and I want to use that word carefully because I realize we are under ex parte limitations, but this is an issue that traditionally has drawn a lot of public comment. People send it to the commission mailbox, and the staff is kind enough as to share them with us. There is no deadline, so to speak, for those, right?
We are receiving comment letters and uploading them to the website as we get them, likely in batches. I'm not into the weeds on the technical issues there, but we are receiving them and uploading them. There is no deadline on them, but as we notice the workshop and then the hearing meeting, and the workshop in November and the hearing in December, those staff documents that are released will have comment periods associated with them so that the public has a chance to react specifically to those documents and then provide you with comments on those documents.
Perfect. And I just want to thank the public for their submissions, and you may rest assured that the staff of this commission does a really good job, a terrific job of sharing your submissions to us. I have, 32 gigabytes of materials, both from appellants and from the public. And we welcome all of those comments. So for everybody who's watching and everybody who's in the audience and you wish to submit stuff, we will try our best to read it given the statutory deadlines and everything else. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll begin with the closing presentations, beginning with the Delta Protection Commission. I understand Don Natoli will be. And a reminder, the time limit is 5 minutes, and the timer is located on the table to my left. I moved it so I could see it.
Well, good morning, Chair Fiorini, members of the Delta Stewardship Council. I'm pleased to be able to join you on behalf of our Vice Chair, Oscar Villegas, who is not able to be here this morning. And I'm joined by our Executive Director, Mr. Eric Bink, who many of you know. But again, he and his staff have been very instrumental in preparing material that was submitted in writing to the Council for your consideration. And I would just note, certainly in hearing some of the conversation this morning, that we you stand behind our letter and the comments contained therein and the information that's referenced there. I would just say, too, that here and on behalf of the Commission, I am Don Natoli, a member of the Delta Protection Commission, and appreciate the opportunity to join you once again today. And I know you have a lot to sift through, and certainly appreciate the questions from the Council to DWR. I want to note that the Commission appreciates the opportunity to advise the Delta Stewardship Council on how the California WaterFix Delta Tunnels Project impacts our joint efforts to protect and enhance the unique Delta values. While the Delta Tunnel Project arguably complies with the Delta Reform Act requirement to accomplish water supply reliability, it fails miserably to do so in a manner that protects and enhances the unique cultural, recreational, natural resource, and agricultural values of the Delta as an evolving place, as the law requires. Stated simply, California WaterFix is inconsistent with Delta Plan policies. If carried out as proposed, the Delta Tunnels Project will permanently alter the rural character of the Delta and its economic pillars, agriculture and recreation, and thus its cultural values as well. Statute requires that these values be protected in accomplishing the co-equal goals. You heard discussion earlier this morning in some of the questions that were brought forth relative to the Delta Tunnels Project and what it provides for as relates to the adequacy of level of mitigation for agricultural impacts. And in the Delta Plan, the Council's plan, the Delta Plan EIR, there was a requirement for one-to-one mitigation for the loss of agricultural land, again, in the EIR. If you convert an acre, basically you provide lasting protection for another acre. The Delta Tunnels Project will permanently convert, as you heard about some of it yesterday, but in the entirety of the Delta, nearly 4,900 acres of important farmland throughout the Delta. It does not incorporate a one-to-one mitigation ratio, as you heard in some of the responses from DWR this morning. Instead, it relies on a suite of measures, this Agricultural Land Stewardship Plan, and the suite of measures, none of which were a response to ideas from Delta farmers and agriculturalists. Very important point. The loss of nearly 4,900 acres of Delta important farmland is truly a significant negative impact in the Delta primary zone, where farmland is protected for continued and lasting agricultural uses. The proposed Delta Tunnels Project also does not respect local government land use, as was mentioned in some of the testimony yesterday. Even though Delta Plan, Delta as a Place, P2, has been mentioned many times, requires proposed projects to respect it. DWR has disregarded, and it's in our letter, numerous mitigation measures proposed by our commission and a number of other parties. Proposals which could, in all likelihood, would minimize some of the impacts to Delta as a place. In fact, DWR should have, many years ago, engaged with local entities. They talk about some of the things and meetings they've had and so forth. It should have really gone to local government, to the affected landowners, community groups, in the design of the project much earlier than they have. And it would be keeping with the intent of Delta Plan Policy DPP2. It's not an overstatement to suggest that the Delta Tunnels project presents an existential crisis for the small Delta communities that would be most affected by the protracted intensive construction period, the permanent infrastructure, and the radical, not evolutionary, effects on the Delta economic drivers of agriculture, recreation, and emerging heritage tourism. DWR has failed to grapple with the reality demonstrated through evidence in the record that California Water Fix puts the long-term sustainability of small Delta communities in grave jeopardy. Now, I would just note this discussion that came up very recently in the testimony earlier this morning about a community benefit fund. I would just add a comment that that's an idea that I think was an afterthought, and appreciate the questioning along those lines, because I don't think that dollars necessarily in any way mitigate for long-term irreparable impacts to those communities and the people in those communities. As was said yesterday, this is likely one of the most consequential decisions that the Stewardship Council will ever make. As the arbiter of how best to accomplish the co-equal goals of water supply reliability and ecosystem restoration, but to do it so in a manner that protects and enhances the unique Delta values. I know those words echo in your mind because you've heard them 1,000 times in the last day or a half. But we, the Delta Protection Commission, put forth and say we believe the Delta Stewardship Council must sustain the appeals and turn the project back to DWR, because we believe only this action will meet the rigorous standards that the Delta Plan is rightly known for. We want to thank you for your diligence in this hearing, and as the seconds count down, we look forward to your decision and stand ready for any questions you have this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you. No questions. Thank you both very much. Next up is Appellant Group A1, North Coast Rivers Alliance. I understand they're not here. For those of you who may wish to receive their 5 minutes, I'll repeat what I said yesterday. Three appellant groups have asked to consolidate their time. That was yesterday. I stated no further requests will be accepted. So we'll move on now to Appellant Group A2, Save the California Delta Alliance. Michael Brodsky. And somebody hit the timer when Michael's ready to begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michael Brodsky on behalf of Save the California Delta Alliance. And with regard to Mr. Bogdan's presentation, it was very general about measures we're taking in the Delta, and we've got a fund, and we're going to think about other ways of doing piles. But it was not really anchored. Your job here is there substantial evidence that the project is consistent with specific Delta Plan policies? And I want to reiterate that it's not. And looking at Delta Plan Policy DPP2, the requirement, quoting from the Delta Plan, is that water management facilities must be sited to avoid or reduce conflicts with existing uses. It's a siting issue. And then if we could go to slide 9, which is the printout that you have in front of you. And this shows how these facilities were sited with respect to the town of Hood. And if I could refer you, if you can't see it on the screen, that's the page that I printed for you. The town of Hood there is the labeled in green. It's a little tiny town next to the construction yard. It's a Delta Legacy community. There are two huge water intake structures that are sited, one touching it, the other one very close. There's a construction yard that's twice the size of the town. There's a geotechnical exploration zone, which will be drilling repeatedly right through the middle of town. where businesses and homes are located. The sound from the pile driving and construction activities will reach 80 decibels at the town there. That's the equivalent of a freight train 15 meters away. The construction period is 8 years. The pile driving Mr. Bogdan referred to is scheduled to take place from May through October each year for 3 years in a row, and I expect it'll run over that. As far as these impacts, the FEIR says that the impacts from the noise are significant and unavoidable. Mr. Bogdan's reference to thinking about other alternative methods in the future after this appeal is done is irrelevant. That's not the project that's before you. The project that's before you is this one here with 10,909,704 impact strikes at 115 decibels each. And what you need to decide is whether the decision to site those intake structures and construction facilities on top of Hood and right across the river from Clarksburg is consistent with the policy of siting water facilities wisely. We're all, you all, council members and staff, are very bright, accomplished people. I think you can probably all recall some point in your life where you made a really unwise decision, even though you're bright, accomplished people. And I think it's obvious that this decision to put those intakes and all that construction infrastructure on top of Hood, a legacy community, and across the river from Clarksburg, a legacy community, was simply an unwise decision. As far as the EI ratio that was referred to, it's a change in D1641. There's no question about it. This is from Water Fix's documents. This is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biological opinion, which is based on the biological assessment drafted by DWR. And it says, for the proposed action, Reclamation and DWR propose that the NDD, North Delta Diversions, be excluded from the EI ratio. This is a proposal. They know they're changing something. In other words, Sacramento River inflow is defined as flows downstream of the NDD, and only South Delta exports are included for the export component. Currently, all exports from the Delta are included in the export component. So now, if they're diverting 5, 6, 7, 8,000 cubic feet per second from the North Delta diversions, that counts as zero exports, and it allows a significant change in the timing and quantity of exports that can be made. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up, Appellant Group A3, Bob Wright.
Good morning, council members. I'm Bob Wright of Friends of the River. With me is Chris Schutz. Bob Wright of Friends of the River. With me is Chris Schutz, water rights advocate for the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance, to present on behalf of Group 3. Before turning it over to Chris Schutz to talk about flows, I have one thing to respond to. DWR, when it was answering questions from Councilmember Thompson earlier this morning about the recent federal memorandums, at one point responded that the federal memorandums about maximizing exports did not deal with California water fix. That is absolutely incorrect. The August 17th memorandum from the Secretary of the Interior is only 2 pages long. On the second page, I will read to you this language. Resolving issues with the state of California regarding the coordinating operations agreement, the California water fix, and the potential enhancement of Shasta Dam. You have two partners. They're at loggerheads on issues about this project. This project simply must be remanded back to DWR. They need to work on their issues, and there's no way you can possibly find that this thing is consistent with the Delta Plan policies when you've got that kind of disagreement between the two partners in a two-partner project. Mr. Schutz.
Thank you very much. Throughout the water fix hearings, there has been a constantly shifting project description. The recent policy direction of the federal government has made the role in the project of federal agencies, including but not exclusively the Bureau of Reclamation, even more uncertain, both in operations but also in adaptive management and real-time operations on which DWR has staked so much. The state of the project today is not appropriately characterized as awaiting refinement. DWR confounds the CEQA standard for a new project with a standard of review under the Delta Reform Act, under which you must find that the project is consistent with the Delta Plan. Project operation is a fundamental element of what you must evaluate. We don't know today what that will be. I understood Mr. Bogdan to say that the understanding of the effect of new federal policy is premature. Exactly. In the coming months, BOR and other federal agencies will demonstrate how they will translate new federal policy into practice in the Delta. In addition, the State Water Board, in either denying DWR or BOR's petitions in issuing permit terms, will provide additional project definition. One small example of that, Ms. Morris referred to earlier, regarding the export-to-inflow ratio. At minimum, the Council should remand WaterFix back to DWR until the State Water Board either denies the petition for change or issues permit terms, and until the federal role is clarified. Until then, the Council cannot answer the fundamental question, consistency with what? Finally, my colleague, Ms. Berrigan-Perea, wanted me to point out that she does not agree with the characterization of the outreach specifically to non-English language speaking groups. As she views it, there was translation into Spanish and other languages of many of the brochures supporting WaterFix, but much less material available that discussed the impacts. Thank you very much, and we'll take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Next up, Appellant Group A4, North Delta Cares Action Committee, Barbara Daly.
Good morning. Thank you, and my name is Barbara Daly, and I'm speaking on behalf of a group called North Delta Cares Action Committee. And this morning, I would like to request that all of North Delta Cares' letters of August 26th and October 15th and yesterday's information and all of the attachments that go with it will be considered in your decision. And then I would just like to continue to say that North Delta Cares asserts that the California WaterFix project should be remanded, and one reason is because it's incompatible with local land use policies in the Delta. Two, it does not comply with the Historic Preservation Act. In fact, even after mitigation, as I pointed out yesterday, all areas of concern are left unavoidable and adverse in the Delta. Three, the levees and therefore the communities in the North Delta are left in danger's way. Four, I'd like to finish the information that I started to talk about yesterday, if I may, because there was a little technical problem. And it began, it is North Delta Care's assertion that there is a problem with the Environmental Review Chapter 24, Hazards and Hazardous Materials. And DWR's Exhibit 212, and I'd like to, I met with Billy this morning and asked if he could please pull that up for us. I'd just like to show that. It's a map of the DWR's Exhibit 212, and these are the gassy fields in the North Delta where the tunnel alignment is going through. And as you can see, the Delta, and specifically here the North Delta, well, there's the South and Central Delta on there too, but the Delta has the largest gas fields in California. So construction could really be an issue going through these gas fields. In fact, Billy, if you'd bring up the next slide, the article in... Just let him get to that first. Did it work? Thank you. There it is. So this is an article from the Daily News that says, remembering the 17 miners killed in Sylmar Tunnel blast 45 years ago. So there was a gassy tunnel accident in California. In fact, it was the largest tunnel accident. And it was Metropolitan Water District that was doing the drilling and doing the tunneling at the time. And so we sent a letter to the Metropolitan Water District telling them about our concerns, because our fire people are the first responders, the people from our fire stations, and we're very concerned about the possibilities of any type of an explosion. And then, on behalf of myself and also California Water Resources, Deidre Desjardins, who spoke with me yesterday, the Department of Water Resources has claimed that they have implemented all feasible mitigations for the California Water Fix project. The recommendations that North Delta Cares made in our comments on the Water Fix partially recirculated draft EIR, EIS, included many feasible steps that the Department of Water Resources could have taken to address some of the worst impacts of project construction. DWR did not implement any of them. And the Delta Protection Commission, Sacramento County, and San Joaquin County made very clear that this project will destroy the North Delta. Doing so is not avoidable, as DWR claims. We were shocked to find out that DWR's engineers did not even consider impacts of construction when weighing locations for the intakes in 2010. DWR's only real concerns appear to be water supply for the state water project contractors. DWR also claims that the only sensitive receptors to releases of hazardous materials are schools, hospitals, resident care facilities, and daycare centers. This is an example of DWR's attempts to define away the impacts on North Delta communities in the Water Fix final EIR, EIS. But in the Delta Plan Amendments, Impact 5.4-4, the Delta Stewardship Council defines sensitive receptors to include rural residences. So this Delta Stewardship Council, we request, should not condone this kind of parsing of impacts on public health. Given DWR's failure to adequately consider and address impacts on Delta communities for the last 10 years, DWR's promise of involving the Delta community is, in the future, consultation of the project rings hollow to us. Yes, they have come out and met with us, but usually do not take our input and use it in the way it's intended. So I'd just like to comment on that. And the Delta Stewardship Council, we request, should remand the project back to DWR. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Daly? All right. Next up is Appellant Group A5, City of Stockton, Kelly Tabor.
Good morning. With your indulgence, because I represent the City of Stockton, also the Sacramento Regional County Sanitation District, I'll combine my response rather than breaking in between And I'll start with just a few global responses to, first, to the department's contention that it engaged in extensive outreach. You heard yesterday from Stockton that that outreach didn't include the city of Stockton, and certainly sending out an email notification of the availability of an already published document for comment doesn't meet the standards of adequacy for consultation and meaningful consultation and consideration of the impacts. Had the department actually engaged in a meaningful consultation with Stockton or with Regional SAN, it would have learned about the unique characteristics of Stockton's drinking water treatment facility, the operating constraints they have, and potentially considered those. So we disagree wholeheartedly with that characterization of their outreach process. And I'll just observe that my firm represents six of the parties to six of the different lawsuits challenging the WaterFix EIR, that ranging geographically from Glenn County in the north to Alameda County, east as far as Placer County, and counties in between. And when we participated over a year ago in the mandated settlement conferences under CEQA with DWR, we were told, we showed up ready to talk, and we were told by the department that it was, quote, obviously too early for them to discuss any means of addressing my client's concerns. That was the fall of 2017 for a process that started in 2008. If last year was obviously too early for them to have a meaningful discussion, it raises serious questions about whether they ever intend to have a serious discussion with the parties who have raised legitimate concerns about the impacts of this project. Also, with regard to evidence, Monday night you received, I believe it was 122 pages of objections to evidence that the department filed, and those objections raised objections such as hearsay or lack of foundation. And I'll just observe there that the department's objecting, in the case of Stockton and Regional SAN, to sworn testimony and expert evidence that was admitted by the Water Board in that proceeding. The department didn't object to that evidence at the time. It certainly doesn't lack foundation, and it's exactly the type of evidence that the department itself is relying on in this proceeding. So we would appreciate the opportunity to respond in writing to those objections, but I think you can find that those have no merit, and you should reject those. With regard to best available science, I thought I heard Ms. Morris say that it was infeasible for the department to present data on water quality on a more frequent time step than the 16-year monthly average data. Stockton's evidence showed that it was absolutely feasible to do that. You could disaggregate the data. And the department's assurances that water quality standards violations would be avoided through real-time operations is irrelevant to Stockton, because they have stated that the only adjustments they intend to make are to ensure compliance with D1641. And D1641 has no compliance point on the San Joaquin River or anywhere near Stockton for M&I uses. And D1641 sets a minimum threshold of 250 milligrams per liter of chloride, which you learned yesterday and is demonstrated in Stockton's testimony is not protective of Stockton's water supply. So I'll also just point out that as to whether real-time operations or compliance with D1641 would be adequate to avoid injury to Stockton, I'll point you to the department's settlement with Contra Costa Water District. If 250 milligrams per liter is sufficient to protect drinking water quality, why did the department agree to provide CCWD with a substitute supply of 30 milligrams per liter? Stockton would take that offer. 110, 30 is much better than 110. Stockton's evidence showed that complying with D1640 simply won't avoid impacts. With regard to the comment that Dr. Lytle's reference to the number of days that chloride exceeds 110 milligrams per liter was based against a comparison against existing conditions, this is true, but even if you use the future baseline that the department is relying on, that they created, the number of exceedances And the impact to Stockton remains huge. At least 268 days over the 16-year period that Stockton cannot use its water supply just due to the California water fix. So the existing condition is relevant to Stockton because that's the one it understands and knows, but even with the department's own numbers, it's still a huge impact. Ms. Morris addressed the, and I apologize for nerding out on the chloride conversion factor, but I will, I do want to point out for the record that Dr. Nader Tarani, the department's expert, did not base his testimony on Stockton's evidence that was related to the approved project. We submitted that in part two of the water board proceedings because that was when it became known to the public that that was the project that the department had approved. But when the department's attorneys cross-examined Dr. Paulson, Stockton's expert, about her choice of chloride conversion factors, she explained there was no factor that was clearly applicable to Stockton's intake. So she used the one that, in her judgment, most closely approximated the conditions there, and that she had considered the alternative factors, including the one that the department used, and that she'd compared those results, and they were similar. The department asked for her work product. We provided it, and it showed that, in fact, if she had used the department's number, that it, results would have been worse. Her result analysis and her choice of factors was very conservative. So you don't have that evidence before you because it was produced after the department submitted its consistency determination, but we're certainly happy to provide that evidence to you, and it will show that had we used the department's own numbers, impacts to Stockton would be worse than we presented them. With respect to reverse flow impacts at Freeport and the Freeport Regional Water Project intake, DWR has never recognized reverse flow events as an issue there. And this is an important issue for Sacramento County. It's an issue for East Bay MUD. So there's no commitment to address impacts there. But with regard to whether there's an operations protocol available that would address impacts to regional SAN, Ms. Morris told you that it would be easy to adjust operations to avoid impacts to regional SAN. And I will observe that an attorney's representations are not evidence, but there is no evidence in the record to demonstrate how or whether this could be done or what the effects of such an adjustment could be on the project's yield. If they have to stop diverting twice a day because of the tides, how does this affect the water supply and therefore the benefits of the California Water Fix project as they've been sold to the project funding participants, or whether to achieve that they would have to release more water from upstream reservoirs. DWR cannot change the tides. They cannot change the fundamental hydrology of the Sacramento River. Those are two of the three factors that influence the reverse flows. The third controllable factor is our releases from upstream reservoirs. That's not part of their proposal, and when their experts were questioned about how this protocol might work in the water fix proceeding, they couldn't explain it. Nobody had any information or any explanation as to how this protocol might work, which validated the concerns that Regional SAN has raised all along and that its own expert raised. With the question of lack of federal participation, Mr. Bogdan admitted there's no evidence in the record related to a state-only project, and this is a real problem because we have no coordinated operations agreement reflecting how the projects would operate if the CVP isn't participating, and there's no evidence that reflects how Delta water quality would be managed in the absence of a federal partner that controls two of the major north of Delta reservoirs that are relied on heavily to manage Delta water quality. That's Shasta and Folsom. And I'm running out of time. Lastly, with regard to groundwater, Ms. Buchholz described a commitment to monitoring changes in elevations, but not modeling. And Sacramento County's concern is that a proper monitoring program requires proper modeling. And without saying they're committing to modeling to inform that the monitoring, that's a problem for the county. And they certainly haven't committed to any long-term modeling or monitoring of changes in stream leakage or effects on the South American sub-basin. And finally, Ms. Buchholz stated that they're proposing to monitor during operations, but she neglected to say that the monitoring is only for 5 years of operations.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions? None. Thank you. Next up, appellant group A7, San Joaquin County et al.
Good morning, Tom Keeling and OSHA Meserve. I'd like to address first DWR's attempt to assure the council this morning about the role of the Bureau of Reclamation in the tunnel project. This is a joint project. The petition for change in point of diversion is a joint petition. It is premised on 11 federal water right permits. And Ms. Tabor just spoke about the federal facilities that it relies on. The fact that the Bureau of Reclamation is not here before you ought to alarm you. In fact, the Bureau of Reclamation has stated that it need not comply with state law. In its February 15, 2017 letter to the executive director of the Water Board, the Bureau stated, quote, Reclamation has neither the legal authority nor the legal obligation to implement the state board's water quality control plan. That is already before you as Exhibit SJTA 203. Since then, there have been two more ominous events. First, the Bureau has threatened to sue the state over its disagreement with the board's proposed water quality control plan update. That is also in evidence before you. Second, the Bureau recently reinitiated the COA, which is critical for the operation of the project proposed that is before you. As Mr. Bogdan correctly said this morning, he, quote, can't speak for the Bureau. You should take that to heart. He cannot speak for the Bureau. So in light of these developments, you have no assurance in front of you and certainly no substantial evidence or any evidence that the project before you is the same project that will actually be built and operated. Ms. Meserve.
Good morning. Just to touch on a couple of items quickly. With respect to the evidence that's before you today, you'll hear DWR mention extensively references to the evidence that they say shouldn't be included here, that what Ms. Tabor and others have discussed and we've cited to and submitted. So I think it's very clear that the council needs to have all the evidence before it, not just the cherry-picked evidence of DWR, even to understand DWR's own arguments. With respect to the collaboration, it really needed to take place at the time of project design. And as we've discussed over the years, there are alternatives that could improve water supply reliability, restore the ecosystem, and protect the Delta as a place. And that's the missed opportunity with this project. With respect to the idea that there's going to be this great collaboration with locals now, that's just not reflected in the project documents and in the requirements before you. And you have to go with what's before you and what's in the mitigation monitoring plan and the project they've actually adopted, not some promises made outside of that process that aren't enforceable. With respect to the specific mitigations, you've heard some about it, but you know, really looking at your requirement under GP1B2, it needs to be as effective. And certainly that hasn't happened, and I encourage you to look at, in particular, Water Quality 11, E and the groundwater mitigation, as well as the wildlife mitigation that we briefed, to see is it a menu of options or is it an actual obligation that's spelled out? And as a responsible agency under CEQA, you also need to look at the environmental documents. So you're looking at it in two ways, under your Delta plan and your policies, as well as under CEQA. And another thing you didn't hear anything about today is the range of operations and the adaptive management and that figure I showed you yesterday. DWR hasn't submitted any evidence in support of operations outside of the what is now their current proposal to initially operate at what they call CWFH3+. So you don't have any evidence before you to support approving a project that would then provide an open door to operate within a full range under adaptive management in a closed door proceeding that doesn't include you or any other agency to make sure that the Delta is a place and the other components of the Delta plan are carried out. So in you heard DWR say that really they are only requesting to be excused from a couple of the consistent of the Delta Plan policies and requirements. The way I look at their consistency submittal, it looks like they have a footnote in every single policy saying that they want to be excused from it, and yet they never provided the feasibility analysis that your own policy requires. So, you know, for protecting the Delta as a place, also the comparison can't be between a worse project and what they're providing now. The Delta Plan should mean something. We've had debates over what the Delta Plan should be. It was adopted. It does have requirements. Those need to be applied. This consistency determination must be sent back to the department so they can develop a project that would comply with the Delta Plan.
Thank you both. Thank any you. Questions? Is Dante Nomolini here? There he is. So Appellant Group A8, Central and South Delta Water Agencies. And this will be our final closing presentation.
Good morning, council members. My name is Dante Nomolini, Jr. I'm here on behalf of the Central and South Delta Water Agencies. One of my favorite features yesterday was the fact that that timer was sitting right in front of us. Thought that was really helpful, but I could work with this.
I couldn't work with it yesterday.
First and foremost, as far as our recommendations, we recommend that you reject the certification on the grounds that it's premature. You've heard a lot about this, but the CEQA and NEPA processes are still ongoing. The State Water Board's change of point of diversion hearing process is still ongoing. Until those processes are completed, none of us will know the water fix's true physical features, how the water fix will be operated, or the water fix's full range of impacts on all of the Delta's unique cultural, recreational, natural resource, and agricultural values. That is essential information to a meaningful review of the water fix's certification. The Delta Plan's own policy states that the certification of consistency should not be submitted until the CEQA process is completed. The State Water Board plays a critical role with respect to the water fix, and the completion of its process is just as important as CEQA. DWR has offered no valid reason to rush this certification in advance of the completion of these processes. It's literally all it said is there's nothing that expressly prohibits it from filing it whenever it wants. That's not a good enough reason. As far as the authority, I believe you have the discretionary authority to decide whether something is ripe for your review. If not, you should find that without this information that comes out of these processes, DWR lacks substantial evidence to support the project. Another reason to reject the certification as premature is the complete absence of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. This is an important thing because it's an important point. The water fix is a joint project, and we only have one of the parties participating in the certification. We recommend that the council should direct DWR to not refile its certification until two things, or either or. One, the Bureau of Reclamation jointly files the request for certification along with DWR and jointly commits to operate the water fix in compliance with the D1641 flow objectives and jointly commits to all other commitments DWR makes in its certification, including mitigation measures. In the alternative, if DWR cannot obtain the Bureau of Reclamation's joinder in the certification and those commitments, DWR should be directed to refile its certification as a DWR-only project and redo all of the environmental and consistency analysis as a DWR-only project. Barring the rejection of the certification as premature, we urge you to consider the fact that none of the parties that represent the Delta interest, from the Delta Protection Commission to all of the Delta counties, to the City of Stockton, to the Central and South Delta Water Agencies, to all of the various environmental and fish organizations, none of them believe for a second that this project will protect and enhance the Delta's unique values as required by the co-equal goals. If the water fix truly protected, enhanced those values, there would be no appeals, not by any Delta interest. Please give due respect to the opinions and concerns of the individuals who live, work, and recreate in this very special and unique place, and to the entities that represent those individuals. For all of the reasons set forth in these appeals, the water fix is the single greatest threat to the Delta's unique values the Delta has ever faced and will likely ever face. As the stewards and protectors of the Delta, we are relying on you to recognize that threat and to ensure that the Delta's unique values are protected and enhanced now and for future generations. Please reject the water fix's certification so that we can all roll up our sleeves and improve the reliability of export water supplies in a manner that truly protects and enhances the Delta's unique values. I know we can do it, and I'm ready to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Dante? All right. Well, thank you to all of the appellants, the Delta Protection Commission, DWR, for your presentations today. That concludes this portion of the hearing. We're going to recess for lunch, and then we will re-resume at 1 p.m. this afternoon to pick up public comment. So we're in recess now until 1 o'clock. Okay, welcome back from our lunch break. We are now back in session. We completed, for those of you who just arrived, we completed receiving all of the formal presentations before lunch, and now we are moving to receive public comment. Just a reminder, again, for those of you that weren't here earlier, any members of the public who want to provide public comment will be allowed 3 minutes for oral presentation. There's a timer located on the table, and I encourage all of you to honor and respect the time limit. If you want to provide public comment and are not a speaker on behalf of the Department of Water Resources, the Delta Protection Commission, or one of the appellant groups, we ask that you fill out a blue speaker card, and those are available over here on the table. These public comments will be heard in group order as we receive the completed blue speaker cards. What I'd like you to do is just note on your card, similar to Southwest, there'll be an A, a B, or a C. And so we'll be calling you up in groups of A, B, or C. Hang on to your cards. And when you queue up for the microphone, and we're only going to use one microphone today, when you queue up to make your presentation, just hand off your completed card to our staff. If you wish to submit written comments at this meeting, please give them to our clerk, Lita Bridey, who is located over here. After we hear from everyone who has filled out a blue speaker card today, we will recess the public comment portion of this meeting and reconvene promptly tomorrow in the same place at 9 o'clock tomorrow to resume public comment. Finally, when you come up to speak, we ask that you do a couple of things so that the council, audience, and the court reporter may hear you and so that your comments are entered into the record and can be responded to appropriately. First, please speak into the microphone clearly. And second, please begin by stating your name and identifying the organization you represent, if any. We will now begin to hear comments from the public, beginning with Group A.
Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Albiani. Today I'm working with Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency, and at the end of my comments, I'll also be making some comments for Mesa Water from Costa Mesa, California. The Santa Clara Valley Water Agency supports efforts to advance the California water fix and urges the Delta Stewardship Council to deny the appeals that the council not uphold the California Department of Water Resources certification of consistency with the Delta Plan. The evidence in the administrative record that has been presented to the council is based on decades of analysis, planning, scientific research, and collaboration by federal, state, and local water and federal agencies, and shows that the California water fix is both necessary and the best approach to advance the state co-equal goals. I just want to throw out to anybody who's been around, do you remember the term CalFed? That's how long a lot of these studies have been going on, and actually before that. The Delta water supply, over the past decade, the Santa Clara Valley Water Agency water purveyors have expended over $10 million in water conservation efforts that reduced our reliance on the Delta water supplies. So we believe in self-reliance. But further, the single largest component of Santa Clara Valley Water capital plan is the expansion of our recycled water system. Such investments, however, are only possible if there is reliable supply of high-quality water imported to assure that compliance with the State Water Resources Control Board adopted salt and nutrient management plan. So through the river, we have certain plans that we need to meet, and we need to mix that in to meet the requirements. Additionally, reliable imported water supplies are key balancing to balance our portfolio and continue to operate our groundwater resources in a manner consistent with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Plan, and that's something you might hear up and down the valley as well. California Water Fix is a long-term sustainable solution that California needs to support our economy, provide water for habitat and native species in the Delta, and increase our resilience to drought and other climate impacts. On behalf of Santa Clara, on behalf of Mesa Water, I also was asked to provide this support for the DUWR certification of consistency. This proposal is important for both the ecosystem and Southern California water reliability and will help with water reliability, including developed supplies and conservation investments. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh. Good afternoon. In the words of Joe Pesci from that movie, My Cousin Vinny, everything that guy said is bleep. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Hall. I represent myself. You guys are the Delta Stewardship Council. Stewardship is the main word in this, in the active word in your organization. You are the people who are responsible for the care, the protection, the use of the Delta for all Californians. You need to have that hat on only when you're dealing with this. Not hats dealing with water going other places. What's a conveyance? What's the best this or that? But the survival and maintenance of the Delta. And it's used for everyone. Water going south, water staying here. There's so much, well, we'll say the marginal Delta flow right now exists. It's pretty known. Any common sense tells you taking out more water above the Delta, it just cannot be good for the Delta. This is science. This isn't gobbledygook. Speaking of gobbledygook, you guys are here involved with hundreds and hundreds of pages of government gobbledygook. I know, because when I was younger, I made up this stuff. You can make A look right, and the next day your boss comes and say, we got to do 300 pages of A looks wrong. And you can do anything. This is a perfect example of changing the goalpost. We've got the E/I, the EI ratio. If you move the goalpost from where it is now to someplace below where you take out this massive amount of 9,000 cubic feet of water per second, you can make any kind of statistics look correct. But the Delta doesn't deal with political correctness. It deals with fact. And if the water isn't coming through there, we're going to destroy an incredible ecosystem. By the way, last week I had a chance to have a working lunch at the Hood Supply Company. Beautiful little, if you get a chance, go down there. Great sandwiches. Right on the water in Hood. This place will go out of business. It cannot exist with the kind of construction you're talking about. It's just for them. So go before anything happens, because it'll be gone. Finally, I'm just going to say that again, repeating the stewardship portion of what your hat should be on today, dealing with the Delta, if you vote to even remotely state that any kind of conveyance of water coming out of the Sacramento River ahead of the Delta is good for the Delta, then you really should resign from this council. I know you guys have lots of other hats to wear, but right now you're here to protect the Delta and use it wisely. I hope you do.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Pierre with the State Water Contractors. I am representing the 27 water agencies that are contracted with DWR to use the State Water Project. The California Water Fix would be a new feature of the State Water Project. We think Water Fix is consistent with the Delta Plan. The Delta Plan's revised Chapter 3 actually states conveyance improvements in the Delta are needed so that water supplies can be safely moved when they are available and conflicts between water supply deliveries and species protection can be avoided. The California Water Fix has been designed to meet this objective. It's been based on the best available information, and it's intended to be able to make adjustments in the future based on the deliberate learning that is built into the project. Some of the ecosystem benefits that have been built into the project include the screen design and location, as well as the operations that are proposed and included in the biological opinions and the project analysis. Related to screen design, the Fish and Wildlife Service stated Water Fix will, by routing water supply through the tunnels, reduce entrainment of fish from the state and federal water pumping facilities in the South Delta. NIMS, in Appendix E of their biological opinion, stated the survival analysis shows either a general improvement or no difference in annual mean survival for winter run. Additionally, the California Water Fix is one of the first projects in the Delta to really take adaptive management seriously, and we know that adaptive management is required for a consistency determination. The adaptive management proposed integrates the existing science and collaborative groups that are already existing and working in the Delta to help guide the science activity and research. The Water Fix includes a number of technical teams to help with the final design of the intakes, the head of river gates, and other features of the project. And lastly, it allows for adjustments over time in operations and other activities to minimize the impacts and to contribute to the greatest extent possible to the co-equal goals that are stated in the Delta Plan. I think we all know the status quo is not an option. We've been studying this for over a decade. We request that you do not grant the appeals because the Water Fix is consistent with the Delta Plan, and we can't afford to not move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Nikki Seward, and I'm the owner of a very small marina and RV park in the North Delta region, and located in Solano County, Ryer Island, and it's northeast of Rio Vista, if you went by the map there, and it's on Steamboat Slough. I'm here to tell you that I spent the last 10 years going to DWR, USBR, water contractor meetings, and I sat there and watched as they are rewriting Delta history. I'm not saying the future history. The past has been rewritten to validate what they are asking to do. I'm really tired of the lies. I'm tired of the written documents falsifying Delta history. And I'm asking you to not approve the Delta Water Fix. It's based on false information. And a lot of this has been documented. I have the different websites that shows the false information, particularly about the North Delta, particularly about Ryer Island, and actually the North Delta and water quality. I went a little off track. So I ask you, I tell you that I've been at all these Water Fix meetings, and the Water Fix does not protect the drinking water aquifer of the Delta. It doesn't protect Solano County, Sacramento County, San Joaquin, Alameda. Our drinking water will get worse and worse if more water is diverted. Even the current amount of water that is being diverted now is too much. The drinking waters of this area of California are starting to be impacted. And you can look at State Water Rights Control Board to look at the public drinking water systems that are using wells that are going downhill. Since WaterFix doesn't consider our drinking water rights and our drinking water aquifer, really what you're talking about is providing drinking water and farming water to areas of Southern California by taking it away from Northern California and from the Sacramento Valley primarily and part of the Northern San Joaquin Valley. This is really unjust. This affects the recreation facilities that have to provide public drinking water. This affects every single farmer in the Delta that has their water is from the drinking water wells. And this affects all the residents. This affects, all the different kinds of recreation business. None of that was adequately considered in the WaterFix hearings. And this was brought to the attention of all the WaterFix persons, believe me. I urge you to not approve WaterFix or ratify it as it is written. It does not protect the Delta. It actually further destroys the environment. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Nikki. Is there anyone else that requests to provide public comment? Group, okay, very good. Any more Group A's? Then we'll proceed to Group A and B.
Good afternoon. My name is Roger Tebow. I live here in West Sacramento, California. As the other speakers before me, I am speaking against DWR's asking for a consistency determination because there is nothing to be consistent about. The Delta Reform Act of 2009 calls for co-equal goals, as you well aware, and there is nothing in the water fix that is equal. It is a rip-off of Northern California water for the benefit of farming agricultural interests in the San Joaquin Valley and Southern California. It's going to kill our fisheries. Like other speakers, I've been coming to these meetings, DWR here, for the last couple of years, and it's very plain to anybody that wants to rationally look at this. The people that are pushing this are Governor Jerry Brown to fulfill his father's flawed goal of how water should work in California, despite nature saying it doesn't work that way. The agricultural interests and the money in Southern California that are pushing this so they can grow trees in the desert, and the various water agencies that are going to make their life easier for themselves. Every environmental group, every fishing group, everybody that's concerned about the Delta and the health of the state of California has come out against the water fix. I remember when part of the plan was to mitigate effects. Oh, that was just thrown out and dropped when they finally admitted, yeah, this is just a water grab. It has nothing to do with health of the environment. It has nothing to do with health of the fisheries. And it violates the very principles that you're supposed to be consistent with, and that's the co-equal goals. There is no equality in the water fix. It's a rip off of water, and it's going to ruin the bay and in the Delta. I grew up in the Delta as a young man. Luckily, in the late 50s, early 60s, the fish population was 17 million. The fish population now is 4 million. In my lifetime, two-thirds of the fish in the Delta have gone bye-bye because of the detriment of the water quality. This is going to make it worse. You're the stewards of the Delta. I know you have a lot of pressures from other areas on you. I know that you were appointed by people that felt that this is a good idea. But as stewards of the Delta, you need to do what's right to fulfill your obligations to care for the Delta and not let it be absolutely devastated by a lack of quality water. And the deterioration of the Delta started in 1960 when they started pumping water south, and it continues now.
Thank you very much.
Hi there. My name is Linda Hall. I reside in Discovery Bay. I have lived in the Delta for approximately 50 years. I know it very, very well in all aspects of the Delta. And I agree with the past two speakers. No one has considered the water quality in Discovery Bay. We're on well water. And right now, toxic algae is so bad, so as green as that board behind you, we cannot swim off our docks. And that is because there is not enough water flow. If you take more water, it's going to get worse. But people are advised not to allow their dogs or kids to swim in that cesspool of toxic algae. A lot of other communities around are in well water. And the farmers in our southern area get their water from the Delta, which is going to be more salty, more polluted. Also, the whole Bay Area needs that water flow to go down to the bay. So I also have been to a number of these meetings, been given limited time to speak after trying to read books full of documentation that people have put out to who are in favor of the water fix. They don't live here. They're not going to see what happens to Hood, Cortland, Locke, and the other small cities like Walnut Grove, how they're going to be destroyed with this construction. And it's a terrible thing. And as the previous speaker said, you are the stewards. I don't know if any of you have a degree in ecology, hydrology, geology, or the life sciences, but when you said at a previous meeting that you can't believe the science that was presented to you because Pluto's not considered a planet anymore, well, Pluto's still there, and the world's not flat. If you guys can't take the responsibility of doing your job and adhering to the water code 85054, then maybe you should resign as stewards, because it's a horrible thing you're going to do to the whole Delta, to the fish, the reptiles, the plants, and all the other animals, the birds, that are just going downhill, not to mention all of us who live here who are really going to suffer. And I would really appreciate your consideration in denying the water fix. It's a horrible taxpayer's boondoggle, and it's going to go the way of the train to nowhere down in Fresno with billions of cost overrun. And the water companies are saying they're going to pay for it, but that's a big fat lie, because ultimately the taxpayers are going to pay for it. Very bad idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Robin Durston. I'm from Sacramento, and I'm representing myself. I'm against the constituency determination. The Delta tunnels do not meet the standard of co-equal goals set forth by the Delta Reform Act of 2009, and that is how the Delta Stewardship Council is supposed to evaluate the water fix. Co-equal goals means the two goals of providing a more reliable water supply for California and protecting, restoring, and enhancing the Delta ecosystem. The co-equal goals shall be achieved in a manner that protects and enhances the unique cultural, recreational, natural resources, and agricultural values of the Delta as an evolving place. California Water Code Section 85054. The goal should be reduced reliance on the Delta, something that cannot be achieved by building two 35-mile-long tunnels to divert 9,000 cubic feet of water per second of the Sacramento River. Southern California can enhance their water storage and use other methods to receive water. Fresh water should not be used to irrigate water-intensive crops like almonds and pistachios in the desert. Fresh water should not be used for fracking in Kern County and other counties. Water fix is not consistent with the Delta plan. Please grant the appeal. Thank you.
My name is Charles Dulac, and I'm here today on behalf of Assemblymember Jim Frazier. The member worked for many years as a general contractor and still uses the old adage, measure twice, cut once. If you don't, your project is liable to fail. For California Water Fix and DWR, measuring twice should have included dialogue with Delta stakeholders in the agricultural, recreational, and cultural communities, strict adherence to the Delta Plan and the co-equal goals, and inclusion of this council's many valuable recommendations. DWR has made their cut, certification of consistency. And now we have to ask, did they measure twice or at all? Unfortunately, they did not. The certification of consistency relies on several assumptions that are unsupported by the evidence in the record. DWR offers that the proposed project represents evolutionary change. It does not, since it will create immediate, drastic changes in the Delta, like construction blight, industrial land use, and decimation of existing agriculture and recreation. DWR claims to have respected local land uses, yet they have not, creating long-term changes and multiple disruptions to the Delta environment and economy. DWR characterizes construction equipment and concrete plants operating for periods of 5 to 10 years as temporary, in contravention of usual and customary definitions. DWR also failed to account for the total impacts on fragile cultural and historical resources, which will be subjected to dramatic increases in traffic, ground vibration, and blight. DWR claims to have exhausted all feasible mitigation measures. They have not. Instead, DWR has ignored, without explanation, recommendations provided by the Delta Stewardship Council with regards to mitigating severe impacts on agriculture and community character. DWR has also ignored or neglected to solicit feedback from local stakeholders on mitigating Water Fix's lasting harm to the Delta's agricultural economy, recreation industry, and cultural resources. Substantial uncertainty has infected DWR's certification of consistency due to federal guidance, which has thrown into question federal commitments to existing coordinated operations. As stated by the Delta Protection Commission in their letter to this council, open-ended pledges or vaguely described commitments to avoid or reduce adverse effects will not satisfy the charge of the law. We cannot wait until shovels are in the ground to realize that future adaptive management or real-time operations will not serve in place of concrete and binding commitments. The co-equal goals and reducing reliance on the Delta must be achieved in a manner that protects and enhances the Delta as an evolving place. Assemblymember Frazier urges the Delta Stewardship Council to reject the certification of consistency submitted by DWR for California Water Fix in order to protect the Delta, its residents, and the co-equal goals. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Karen Metters, and I'm a longtime resident of Walnut Grove. And I'm speaking today on behalf of lack of local genuine engagement. Some people don't know. I've been involved in this stuff here, this one, for the last 10 years. I've been involved in Delta water issues since the mid-90s when I belonged to the North Delta Conservancy. And at that time, the North Delta Conservancy was a chartered land trust. And we chartered ourselves at that time because our local landowners on the east side of the Sacramento River, after 1982 and we defeated the original peripheral canal, we still have landowners that were getting knocks on their door by Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Water Resources, basically telling them that we were going to take their land and there was nothing that you could do about it. So this has been going on and it continues to go on. We've been marginalized. Let's go to BDCP. All of our representatives, including some of our local reclamation districts, in order for us to have a table at the BDC back in the day, we had to sign on to agree that we wouldn't disagree with what the BDCP was and what they were putting down. And since people in good conscience could not do that, we didn't have a seat at that table. We have not had a seat at any table. This one here, we have one elected representative that represents all of the people inside the Delta. That's it. The Conservancy says it does, but all they're considered or they care about are the stakeholders, your NGOs, government agencies, everybody else, except for the person who's on that plot
and who pays their property taxes, who puts the money into your guys' pocket by way of our tax dollars, and yet we can't get a decent seat at the table. You do not engage with the locals. We have not. We've been marginalized. Several of us at times have been told to sit down and shut up. Very much at quite a few of the public meetings, they don't want to hear what we have to say. And that's wrong. I don't see how anybody in any good conscience can take and pass something like this, knowing that you have this many people in a wide geographic area coming and saying the same things. You can't. You cannot, in good conscience, certify this as in compliant with the Delta plan. It not only needs to be remanded back to DWR, but I would go so far and I would kill it in its entirety and make you start over from the get-go. Your best available science, thank you. Your best available science, I was in the meeting room when Jeff Lund, sorry, this it gets a little bit much here, but at the time when they decided that they were going to corral the best available science to the science of the last 40 years, the best science that was done for hydrology, the first two programs, the first one was in the 1930s when the Central Valley Project went through and the federal government did it. The second one was when the State Water Project came through in the 1950s that led up to 1960. That's your best available science. The stuff that we've been dealing with the last 40 years, in my opinion, is the same crap what got us here. That is not the best available science. It is taken away from our Delta Science Board. Critical, critical information. They're being hand-fed. Spoon-fed exactly what this process in the Department of Water Resources wants to say that it's the best available science, and it's not. And we have PhD people with incredible intelligence to take and add to this. But those that have something different to say to this on how to resolve our water issues, if we are resolving the issues in the state for the state of California with a public trust resource such as water, this is not how you do it. Hank Nordoff told me way back at the beginning of this process that it was the charge here at the Delta Stewardship Council to make sure that all of the water taken from the Delta and sent down south was put to the highest economic value that there is. And it is not farming. It's not farming up here. It's not farming down south. It's obviously never going to be farming in Westland Water District. This isn't about getting water to the farmers. It's about making sure that their water allocations are high enough that when we do finally cut them off, they own and they control our water, and they will send it back out to municipalities and industry, and we will import all of whatever's left of California. We'll start importing our food because we're not going to be growing it up here. Please pay attention to the locals.
Thank you for your
comments. Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone else that wishes to provide public comment? Yes, we have one more. And I'll encourage the audience to withhold your applause and to respect the presenters. Thank you.
So my name is Karen Wilson. My father was born and my mother born and raised in California. The Delta is your responsibility. I believe that you might remember, maybe if I hold it to the picture or the camera. Oh, okay. So do you remember this?
It was submitted in evidence yesterday.
It was? This Eco Restore?
I believe a companion piece was, yes.
Well, what happened to it? That's the part that hasn't been considered, that needs to be considered by you. In other words, your responsibility is for the Delta, stewarding the Delta. So, what about the importance of making it better? That's what you're supposed to be working on. How can it be making it better to
pump water from much higher up in the Sacramento River and through a tunnel out? Obviously, what's going to happen to the ocean? It's going to be able to go in more because there will be less water going out to the Delta. I know there are a lot of papers. I've been following this issue for a very long time. But how obvious this must be. How can you have less water coming in and expect the salinity not to go up? That's my biggest question to you. And I want to make sure you understand your responsibility to enhance the Delta. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Chuck Kelly. I'm not David, for all those who were looking for David. At any rate, I just want to endorse the comments that were just made and have been made previously, and particularly, there's even some truth to those in favor of what's going forward, in that I believe it's the goals that have been set, as someone expressed it, as a change in the goalposts. And I think that's true. If you look at a bigger picture, this was designed to support about 30 million people. We're at 40 million. I actually think you should direct your attention to how are we going to begin to store enough water to actually serve 40 million people and the new ag that exists in the valley. I just ask you to really think outside the box a little bit here and try to solve the real problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further requests for public comment? I see none. Before I recess, does anyone have anything they wish to? Council Member Gatto?
Well, first I want to thank all the members of public who took time out of their days to come here. I know that this is not always convenient, and it's hard. It's hard to come up here, put your businesses aside for the moment, and stop what you're doing during your day and come up here. I want to thank you very much for doing so. I also want to thank Assemblymember Frazier and his representative for being here. Really appreciate your advocacy and your comments. Is Ms. Hall still here, right? Ms. Hall said something that I think was very important, and that is the frustration at when you come to one of these meetings and you get 3 minutes and you're facing stacks of paperwork that you're trying to argue against. When I was in the legislature, that was one of the hardest things for us to deal with, frankly, or at least for me to deal with, is we would have these pieces of legislation that profoundly affected people's lives. And they would, in many cases, take buses up to the Capitol, fly to the Capitol, drive all night to come to the Capitol, and then they'd get 3 minutes. And it's really, really tough. It's really tough, and Ms. Hall made a very good point. So thank you for doing your best to confine your comments to 3 minutes. I also want to stress and build on something I said earlier, which is, we read, or I make an effort to read everything you get us. It's voluminous sometimes. The staff does a really good job at collecting it all and getting it to us. So if there's anybody out there, either at home or in today's audience, who doesn't feel like they had enough time, by all means, get us stuff. We're under ex parte limitations, and I think the stuff has to be published or something, that lawyers here can help with that. But your comments are all welcome. We do want to hear from you, and we appreciate those who came up here in person. Tomorrow we are reconvening for people who couldn't make it today. I'm going to be watching tomorrow on tape mostly. I have a small law firm, and judges, no offense to Judge Damrell, are not always that accommodating to us, and we are at their mercy. So I will not be here tomorrow, but I will be listening to the entire tape. The staff is going to make sure that I do that, and also I'm going to read everything that has gotten to me in a paper format or an electronic format. So just want to thank everybody in the public for their participation. We value it. We do very, very much appreciate hearing from you. It makes our jobs a lot easier. Thank you.
Very good. Last call for public comment today. Then this meeting is now in recess until 9 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, we'll be meeting here. Thank you.